1, 2.
1, 2.
All right, we're good.
Nice.
So, you're very welcome to this week's episode of the Spot Me Podcast. My name is Daniel Annan.
My name's Niall McCann.
Niall, a scooch under the weather. It's a good thing I came armed with ginger ale.
You did. Thank you very much. And whiskey. And very important.
More importantly. Yeah. It is the Spot Me Podcast. We're turning into the fucking Guided by Voices of podcasts.
Oh, yeah, a wee bit.
Yeah, guided by spirits.
Just like, we've got, what's the word for being prolific? What's that? We've got tons of output, and we're drunk a lot of the time on the show, so we're just turning into Guided by Voices.
My life. Turning into my life.
Yeah. So you've been sort of...
Yeah, I've been a bit dosed.
Yeah. Say, you still sound a bit dosed. But you went out last night, though, hitting the town.
Yeah, but... Dosed up. Yeah, yeah. I just met up with somebody. It was kind of cool.
Nice.
So it was nice.
Do you think you passed on your cold? Is that what she's going to take away from your first date?
I was very careful, and I made it very clear at all points. I'm dosed.
I'm not dosed. Feeling well.
Actually, no, I felt pretty fucking good by the end of the night. But I was, you know, I was...
Alcohol.
Yeah, I was...
It does kind of... Even beer, if you have a cold, does tend to sort of medicinalize you a bit. Like, it does make you feel a little bit better.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to be drunk, isn't it?
It's pretty wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to catch on.
I had a Friday booked off work to go and do my driving test.
Oh, yeah.
I was just telling you. Then when I got there, I had the printed fucking insurance disc and I couldn't do it. So I literally went home and drank beers and watched Oasis. The house was empty when I got back. So I was like, I'm going to watch Supersonic and get a little bit day drunk here.
Nice.
It was all right.
Yeah, proper order. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's good every now and then. You don't want to... People worry a lot about the test. I don't think it's something...
My brother was telling me that it's not even really about being a good, like, the best driver in the world. It's about getting the car around town without crashing it, pretty much. Like, you know,
there's like fucking there's marks you have to hit, and
yeah,
and just forget about anything else. Forget about anything else. Just hit the marks.
Yeah,
you'll never drive like
that
again.
Did you pass first time?
I passed second time, but it was the first time I actually did the test, because the first time I showed up, I was on the wrong date. It was like the 16th I showed up on, but it was the 14th.
You're supposed to be there on the 61st.
I was supposed to be there on the 14th. So that was, yeah, red faces. That was typical of me.
Okay.
That didn't go down well. I got et for that.
Really?
I went back home. Yeah.
Who et you?
Just various people.
Oh, okay, okay,
in my
okay.
Life.
Yeah, what?
Like, yeah, apparently it was like Tuesday, not today. What?
That's always a weird one, isn't it? Where you're like, well, can't be helped. What?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, I don't know what we're accomplishing here. I don't know why sitting in silence for this entire rest of the day is going to make anything any better. I've gone and re-fucking scheduled this.
No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, anyway. Listen, I'm on the pass now. No, I'm a great driver.
How is your car still?
Oh no, it's gone. It's gone.
What
it's
happened?
Gone. Scrapped.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you make any attempt to go and get it back?
Well, no, not to get it back. It was in bits, man. It was they absolutely lashed into it. And the guy I was talking to, your man over here, Lavery, he shook his head. He was like, you don't spend this money on that car. And I was like, all right, okay, fair enough. So
just one day you were a card man, and the next day you were carless.
Yeah, there was a brief period where I was immobile car man. Yeah, but that was brief. Jeez. And in the end, I just went, yeah, fuck it. Okay, that's it. And because I'm living in town now, I don't really need it. Like,
is it like one less thing to worry about?
Yes.
Because like, I know like, you know, honestly, if you're in a couple and one person's doing all the driving, it's not fair. And
no,
you need
isn't.
To go and learn how to drive.
Yeah.
If I was on my own, there'd be no fucking way I'd be learning how to drive. It's the whole thing freaks me out, you know.
It's handy for some things, like, you know, my sister needs me to babysit or anything. I still do it, but, like, I'm getting
picked up and dropped off like a teenage babysitter, like, you know.
Yeah, my mom picked me up from work the other day because I got into mom's for me tea on Saturday after work, and she picked me up. And it is a little bit like, all right, I'm fucking 36 and my mom's picking me up outside work.
There's a touch of that, but I'm not doing it. I'm not replacing the car until other things are sorted.
Yeah, no, I get you. You know, I get you. So
that's going to be, that's just the way I have decided that now.
Oh, do you know what I was watching this week?
What were we
watching? I watched Back, the thing with David Mitchell and Robert Webb in it.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. Then I went looking. I didn't watch it, but I went looking it up.
Myself and Kat kind of got into a groove with it. It was on Netflix. It's on I think All it was Four Netflix. As well.
Oh, maybe that's probably where
myself and Kat watched an episode of it just to see. And it was funny enough to watch another one. We ended up watching the whole thing over about 2 days.
Was it worth watching then?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a fiddly kind of storyline. It's not as natural as Peep Show. Peep Show, I don't know if it was just like you didn't need much setup. There were two lads who used to go to college together, living in the same house.
Yeah.
Have at, like, you know. Whereas this was a little bit more fiddly, classic. Like, you know. So what'd you say?
Classic.
But this was a little bit more fiddly, but quite funny. I have to say, it was a funny show.
All right, fair play. I will check it out then. I will check it out because, I watched a lot of shit during the week.
Oh, I was thinking, yeah, if you were bedridden, if you were riding the bed, you were probably watching some stuff.
Yeah, I watched The Hateful Eight.
Oh, was that the first time you'd seen it?
Yeah.
What'd you make of it?
I thought it was all right, actually. You know,
it's grand, isn't it?
I was feeling maybe I was a bit hard on fucking Tarantino.
I enjoyed it in the cinema, and then watching it again was when I was like, you know, maybe like. When you're not expecting it, that's the best time to watch a Tarantino film. But I think once you start picking it apart the second and third time, that's when everything starts kind of falling apart a little bit, you know?
Yeah, there's probably a bit of that. I was kind of dosed, and I was just off work on Wednesday. And so
you should have watched Once Upon a Time in America. Weren't we just talking about that?
Yeah, we were actually, last week or a couple of weeks ago, Yeah, maybe. It was... I didn't mind it. It was grand, you know.
What's her face gets wailed on for the whole film. What is the actress's name? Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Was it Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Yeah, but she's proper nasty. Like, you know, she if that was a dude, she'd probably get wailed on more. You know.
That didn't strike me particularly as awful or anything.
She was, you know,
because it was Tarantino, like,
and it was that she was that. She was a bad egg. Lawmen are going to knock her from one end of the room to the other.
She was a bad egg. And also, it's, you know, there's kind of a time to it, you know. He does like glorifying that macho bullshit, though.
Yeah, he does kind of love the shots of people being super macho.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's putting your boot on the chair and taking a razor blade out of it or, you know, whatever. But
Yeah, look, it was grand. And then I saw Black Panther today.
Oh, is it good?
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, cool. Yeah, my cousin and his girlfriend went to see it and said it was really good.
I was properly teary by the end of it, in fact.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
With those things, if Kat wants to go and see it, I'll go. Otherwise, I probably won't see it, you know?
It's worth a watch. Yeah, look, it's you know, if you're not that into superhero stuff, it's not going to be the one to convert you. Like,
No, I doubt it. It'd be a bit late in the game to get converted all of a sudden.
Unless maybe, you know, I do hear there's a lot of, I think in America especially, there's a lot of black folks are kind of getting on board the Black Panther wagon, you know. So you'll see how that translates for other
cool
films. It's very good. It's very cool.
What was the last superhero thing I saw? It must have been... Yeah, I went to see... I enjoyed Thor Ragnarok. That was the last one I saw. That was the last Marvel film, wasn't it?
It was pretty good, all right. Yeah. It's pretty good. Your hammer pulls you off. Pull me off the ground. Off the ground. That bit where Banner is turned back into Banner and he doesn't really want to be the Hulk again, but Thor really needs him to be able to fight. I think, you know, I could be of use to you like this. Yeah. Could you, though?
I kind of like the Hulk as kind of like this sort of Elvis character, like, you know, who just, like, you know, kind of had everything he could possibly want, like, you know.
Vegas Elvis, baby.
Yeah.
I never thought of him like that.
He kind of was a bit of a Vegas Elvis, because he didn't have to do very much.
No, he just did what came natural, like.
Yeah.
That's Elvis for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe it was. There's a popular theory that everything Elvis did after he came out of the army was all shit, that he did all this great rock and roll stuff before he went into the army, and then he came out, and it was basically the fast track to Vegas, but people forget that, like, he did In the Ghetto and Suspicious Minds, and I just can't help believing.
Suspicious Minds was the one I was going to say.
He did his comeback special after he came out of the army.
That is Suspicious Minds is kind of a big band sort of a song.
Yeah, yeah. Although
it is different from like Heartbreak Hotel or Hound Dog or whatever.
If you ever are at a wedding and the band does Suspicious Minds, they never do the waltzy bit. The bit where it kind of it turns into a waltz for a few bars and then goes back in, caught in a trap, you know. But yeah, for some reason, wedding bands just refuse to do that little waltzy bit, like, you know.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think the thinking is that the dancing stops because Irish people get very confused by non-jive time signatures.
Really?
Yeah, they do. They can't dance to anything except the sort of, you know.
Oh, I would have thought we'd be able to waltz.
Not at weddings, for whatever reason. There's something about alcohol and jiving that's like fucking, you know, it's like fucking chips and beans, you know.
Like egg and chips.
Egg and chips. Or most things and chips.
Chips and anything, really. You can always get chips. I'll have a side of chips, please.
Yeah, you'd have a side of chips with, like, sushi.
Chips are vegan, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And actually, speaking of vegan, we went for sushi the other night down at that place on the corner down of Park Street.
What is it called?
It's really nice.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. A couple of people have told me it's really nice.
Yeah, it's good. Like, the last time I was in there, I had one of the more sort of Chinese takeaway kind of dishes, and it wasn't that nice. You know that kind of gloopiness that Chinese takeaway has?
MSG.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? Yeah, like, after a little while, you're like, even after 2 forkfuls, you're like, this was a fucking error, you know. But the sushi over in that place is, look, I'm not sure it's good sushi, it's something a bit different in Dundalk, and it's nice, you know.
Yeah, okay,
if you had some fucking sushi expert down, I'm not sure he'd be like,
what did you have? A mate of mine, Shane Reddy, he makes sushi.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking take some to the next poker night, man.
You're here first, man. Well, I think he does. Yeah, no, he definitely did. At one stage, he made sushi. Anyway.
A friend of mine...
he does a lot of that cooking stuff. He's very good at that shit.
My mate Charles, that I used to live with, he went fishing one night and came home and made sushi with raw salmon. Mm. Or maybe it was raw mackerel. Actually, no, it was raw mackerel.
If he caught it himself, it was almost certainly mackerel.
Yeah, there's a certain point in the year in Galway where the mackerel are literally, like, fucking jumping out of the sea, trying to bite onto fucking fishing hooks. Like, you
very
know.
Nice.
But I was like... Didn't really trust him for it to not poison me, but I ate it anyway, and it's the nicest sushi I've ever had. It was fucking awesome. It was
fresh,
really good. Like,
probably,
you know,
just makes the difference.
Straight out of the fucking sea into
fair play.
Sushi.
I didn't have anything planned as to what I would swap next week.
I don't either, actually.
But I've just thought of one thing that I watched during the week. You're probably going to hate it, but you just literally reminded me of it. Like.
Okay, goody.
Yeah, okay, fair play.
I'll hate it for 90 minutes. If it's some 3-hour fucking scrolls and beards and swords, forget about it.
I think it's like 56 minutes.
You're kidding? Oh, yeah, well, whatever it is. Yeah, we're swapping that.
Okay, fair play.
So, speaking of swapping, Noel... This is the Swap Meet podcast.
Sorry for that sound.
Well, it was a pop.
Yeah.
It rhymes with swap.
Pop Meet Swadcast.
You and I get together once a week and we swap pop cultural artifacts, be they movies, albums, mm-hmm. TV shows, mm-hmm. books, comics,
mm-hmm.
fucking partridges, pear trees, the whole lot.
Hair gel.
Hair gel, yeah. I wouldn't be able to swap anything with you in regards to hair gel. I don't have a regimen.
Do you not? You wouldn't use gel or anything?
No, like no impurities.
Okay, fair play. Fair play. My body is my temple.
What's the fucking point?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe wax or something. So a lot of people use
look
wax.
Like fucking Gene Vincent or someone, like, you know.
Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah. But so we swap shit every week. We get back here and we talk about it. Mm. What do you want to talk about first?
Can we get Innerspace out of the way?
Yeah, let's talk about Innerspace.
Because I quite like Innerspace. I feel like that'll slow in. And Robin Hitch, we'll get around to Robin.
I don't want to be the fucking...
So you want to start off positive.
I don't want to be the negative Nelly all the fucking time. But go on. Okay, right.
Inner Space. Martin Short, in his prime.
In his prime. Yeah. Dennis Quaid, in his prime.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan, in her prime.
Lots of people priming about.
Lots of people in their prime. And it's a Joe Dante film.
And Joe Flaherty in there for a minute.
Who's Joe Flaherty?
He was on SCTV with Martin Short. He was the dad in Freaks and Geeks.
Oh.
And he was the guy in Back to the Future who's waiting on Marty McFly with the letter.
Yeah.
I remember. We've had this letter in our archives since 1889 or whatever it was. 1885, I guess it would be.
They were good films, weren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, did you not like them?
I mean, looking back at it now, no, they were good. And it actually ties into... Inner Space is kind of I feel like it's a film they don't really make anymore. Is it, like, did you think there was a lot of these kind of high concept comedies in the 80s, like where it's like, all right, Aladdin's
Future,
Flight of the Navigator,
Short Circuit, was that a comedy? Flight of the Navigator,
I remember being pretty funny. Yeah, I laughed at it when I was a kid, and that's who it's for.
Any
of these body swap things with Fred Savage in them, like, you know, like those big.
Big, you know,
I feel like it's the kind of film that doesn't really get made anymore.
You're probably right about that. That's weird, isn't it?
It made me kind of think, because I was watching it and thinking, like I said to you earlier, a fucking man prone to anxiety, thrown into dangerous situations by forces beyond his control. Nothing to relate to there.
Yeah,
But I was saying to Kat, I can't, like... This is obviously a film Niall fucking loved when he was 9.
And I watched it during the week. That's the only reason I swapped it, was so I could watch it during the week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I loved it pretty much bit as much now.
And I enjoyed it to a point, like, you know, but it's like, I'm not going to have the same fucking warm feelings at 36, like, you know, to this thing.
That is true. I watched that. But I was kind of doing a wee bit of reading about it then, and it is sort of an interesting enough thing. It was one of the first films... that really made its money on video, on home video. It was
really?
Yeah, it didn't do well in the cinema, but then it really took off on video.
It's got a sort of an unnecessarily fussy plot. It seems that it's 40 minutes. I looked at the time and I think it's 40 minutes before Dennis Quaid and Martin Short are even interacting with each other. That's a bit of an oversight where you're like, let's get to the thing. Like, I think a lot of those 80s comedies, a lot of the Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder comedies are a bit like that, where there's plot. All right, the two boys are together. All right, it's a laugh for a while. And then 45 minutes later, you can see, oh, there's a story we have to finish now. So get everybody to the stadium or whatever the fuck it is. Like,
yeah,
and,
all right.
You know, there's a lot of that going on with 80s comedies. Like,
there,
you know,
is, but I respect that. I actually respect them taking the time to set it up, like. It's not like, you know, fucking Transformers where you have to get these fucking things transforming in the first 15 minutes or else.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to watch the rest of this shit. And it's just like, by the time things start happening, it's just like, it's too much. What? For fuck's sake, lads. I don't know what the fuck's going on here. Whereas with Inner Space, you have, okay, Dennis Quaid is a test pilot, but he's reckless and he's falling out. Devil may care, and he's falling out with Meg Ryan, who really is the love of his life, but it just doesn't seem to be working out.
She's the love of everybody's fucking life in this film.
Well, she's lovely, isn't she?
She was.
She's lovable. Yeah, she's had some.
Weird, like, as well, like, personally.
Well, she the way weird, she looks just didn't notice now, that. You'd have to feel a bit weird, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, but it's a lot of pressure, you know? She was known for being just spectacularly beautiful, and she was spectacularly beautiful, but if you get to a point where you become like the focal point of the culture, and the whole, your reason for existence is that you're spectacularly beautiful, that shit doesn't last forever, like, I mean...
No, that's true.
So, you know, maybe, you know...
I know only too well, Niall.
Whereas I'm maturing like a fine cheese.
So I'm maturing like a fine ham.
Yeah,
the mold is on its way.
So, but I don't know. It's a tough old world for you know, women in that game. Having said that, some of them have, you know, aged more sensibly.
Who's aged more sensibly, then, do you think?
Oh, there's a lot of sort of older women. I was at Black Panther today, and Angela Thing is in it.
Angela Jolie?
No, Angela Bassett.
Oh, okay. Tina Turner.
Yeah, she's looking well.
She was in the first ever 15s movie I ever saw in the cinema, and it was Vampire in Brooklyn. What the fuck I was doing there?
It's not that great.
No, it's not. It's shite.
You could be forgiven for thinking, oh, it's like Coming to America, but with vampires instead of Africans. Yeah, no, it really isn't. It's Coming to America was really good, though.
As I recall, yeah, that was a funny movie. I haven't seen it in a long time. Long, long time.
Neither have I. Maybe I'd swap that next week.
I was sitting in on the radio this morning for the Dundalk FM Sunday morning show. I played
on the street where you live.
On the street where you live, I played Cupid.
Cupid, yeah. Draw back your bow.
We were talking about it last week. Frank McAlevey.
Frank came to the
jumped
rescue
in with the name of the song.
Thank you, Frank.
Frank actually.
It's Sam Cooke, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I feel like I should have known that.
But you guys were talking about the chords. Were you trying to figure it out on the guitar? I'm pretty sure, I haven't sat down with it, but it goes to the minor, I'm pretty sure.
At some point, possibly.
Yeah,
I can't remember now.
I'm pretty sure it goes to the A minor at some point.
Claire, you can do it fairly simply. It's not.
Yeah, it's actually.
It's not super complicated. I was just like, just do it with the fucking D. Just do it with the D. That's not it, that's lazy. It's like, okay,
yeah, but she's right. She's right.
Yeah, but you know what?
What are these fucking Motown lads pounding it out, writing these songs just to fucking go, I'll just play the D.
I'll just play D. Look, if there had been anybody else here and I'd have played the D and she just stopped to work it out, you know who the king of that party would have been.
Neither of you. The person who took the guitar off you.
How dare you.
But yeah, no, after I watched that film, that fucking song was in my head.
Mm. And what about, was the other one not, no?
What's the other one?
Let me tell you about a place.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Somewhere up the New York way. No?
What song is that?
Where the people are so ways. Twisting the night away.
Twisting the night away.
Yeah, that's the song that plays when he jumps into the car at the end to go off and have another adventure because now he's all self-confident.
Oh, that only plays once, though. The other Cupid crops up a few times.
Well, that's their song. That's him and Meg Ryan's song.
Yeah, but I never would have, that wouldn't have stuck in my head now, to be honest, like, you know.
It's stuck in mine, it's fairly stuck in mine now, I have to say. It's like, I consider that a very romantic ballad.
A big part of your whole being.
Yeah, well, this whole film was a big part of my whole being.
See, this is the thing, like, I can only look at it and go, yeah.
How do you feel about Joe Dante as a director?
I have seen him in a lot of documentaries over the last few years, and I really like him.
Yeah.
And I really loved Erie, Indiana when I was younger.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, Erie, Indiana was really good.
Do you remember the
obviously
one?
Obviously fucking Gremlins, like, you
Gremlin,
know.
The first Gremlins.
I
really
like
good.
Gremlins too. The new batch.
It's
is that what it's called?
It's alright, yeah.
This is a film I haven't seen in fucking easily 20 years, but I used to really enjoy it. Is that where they all sing New York, New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking, what's not to like?
Yeah, it's a bit.
I tried OTT, something different, like you know.
Yeah, the problem with something different is
it's not
the same. It's just not the same.
I'd have to watch it again, but I really like
so
Gremlins too.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Joe Dante has like a cultural position for other people that he doesn't necessarily have for me. But I didn't realize this. Although I think Kieran McNulty one time told me this was a Joe Dante film, and I just forgot.
Kieran McNulty is something of a Joe Dante fan.
Yes, exactly.
I think.
So he would know, like.
He's great on the Corman documentary.
Really?
Yeah, Joe Dante. Yeah, remember we did it on the spot.
We did it, yeah.
But Joe Dante was kind of like, him and another guy used to make trailers for Roger Corman. And I think they just fucking had the life of Riley making shitty B-movies for a few years.
Well, he speaks very highly of Innerspace, Joe Dante. He says that is the work that is most, that what is on screen is most like what he had in his head.
Really, yeah?
Apparently, yeah. He really liked it. And so it was kind of a bigger, it had this whole life on home video. It kind of was one of the films that really pointed the studios to this thing, like, oh, actually, we can make money out of this shit. This is a whole new fucking revenue stream here for us. And it also got nominated for an Oscar for the visual effects, which, in fairness, do, I think, hold up.
They do, actually, yeah, they do hold up. Apart from the bit where he's, you know, where he's the cowboy and they go to meet the fucking bad lad. And then his face starts changing. Like, it looks a bit, it's a bit Total Recall.
Looking. Big Jack, don't knock, just come in.
But I know that, didn't Joe Dante make that movie, The Howling, that had the misfortune to come out around the same time as American Werewolf in London?
Yes.
And got a buried, I think. I think that was Joe Dante. McNulty, fucking correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
sure. Kieran, let us know.
He's not listening.
That's quite early for him, is it not?
I think that was him. I'm pretty sure that was him.
Fair play, that's very possible. There's a lot of... I was thinking about werewolf films actually during the week for some reason. I'm not 110% sure why.
I don't know. Have you ever seen a really good one? Like American Werewolf in London.
American Werewolf in London.
But the film itself is good, but it's also like the werewolf is only in it for what, like 10 minutes overall? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Best werewolf film ever is fucking the Thriller video.
Yeah,
that scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I remember you saying,
oh my god, it really fucking freaked
me out.
Didn't
like folks have to go and rent the making of
the
video?
Yeah, they had
to
like seriously like fucking talk to me about this and be like, look, it's a video, like it's fucking like, and like luckily enough there was a making of it, like that's weird for the 80s, like, you know.
Yeah,
but,
it probably is. Yeah,
but I just thought there was the bit where he covers his face at first and everyone's like, Michael, and he looks up and he goes, get away, and his eyes have gone yellow and he's like halfway through the transformation. That was the scariest thing I'd ever seen.
Little did any of us realise at that point that was pretty good advice for most Michael Jackson's fans.
Well, that's speculation and hearsay.
Yep.
But you saw this film when you were very young?
When I was a kid I saw it, yeah. And it is a kid's film. Although, that's another thing I was thinking.
Really?
That's the thing. It is a weird... It is one of those 80s weird things.
It's a weird tone. Because their relationship, like Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid's relationship, is in quite an adult predicament. Like,
yeah.
You know? Like, look, it's not a fucking relationship drama or anything. But, like, he's... And you see his arse in it as well. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd been working out.
Yeah,
hadn't
he was in exceptionally good shape when he made that film. Definitely better shape than he was when he was Jerry Lee Lewis a few years later.
Yeah, that was a quick moment in time, I'd say.
That's the
it was like, oh shit, he read the script and he was like, oh fuck, I better.
Yeah, if you're gonna see my arse, I better make it an arse worth seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's, if you ever watched the start of Great Balls of Fire, which I used to actually really like because I just liked all those music films, but at the start of that film, when they, I remember hearing someone talk about it when they go to the jazz club to see the forbidden music or whatever at the start, they literally cross over to the wrong side of the tracks. They literally like cross over tracks and there's a wee shack in the distance, like, you know, where this jazz club is.
Nice one. But it's a strange film. Also, what I noticed is, do you remember that scene? Okay, the plot, for anybody who is not familiar with
it. Like, I wasn't until last night.
Dennis Quaid is a Devil May Care Air Force test pilot who is doing doing his latest test piloting thing, or a special...
They're going to put him in a rabbit.
They're going to shrink him down, Fantastic Voyage style, and inject him into a rabbit so he can pilot this little pod around a rabbit. Martin Short is Jack Putter, who's an anxious, put-upon... supermarket clerk who is a bit of a hypochondriac and
highly strung, you might say.
Highly strung, not very comfortable with being in the world and dealing with people and all the rest. During the experiment, Dennis Quaid gets shrunk down, but before he has a chance to be injected into the rabbit, industrial saboteurs break in. His mate manages to go on a fucking sprint and in an effort to save him, injects him, not into a rabbit, but into Martin Short, who then has to communicate with this little guy who's floating around him as they try and recover a microchip that will make it possible to save him again.
It's a pretty fiddly plot. like in some places.
It is, but it's not complicated. It's no, just it's not it's a lot of setup.
But for what it is, like, which is like, well, I'm sure it wasn't made to be this, but what it became with a lot of other films of its ilk was an ITV Saturday afternoon fair.
But,
you know,
but almost perfect ITV Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, well, like it was, it's up there with Short Circuit, with Big, with Flight of the Navigator.
It has that,
you know, vibe. That kind of. There was to be like comedies in the 80s weren't about some loser and his mates hanging out. They had sort of stories to them, like, yeah, you know, they had which sometimes got in the fucking way, like, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people don't like those Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor comedies. Now I do, because I came to them as a kid, like, but a lot of people are like, oh, they're just, why do we need all this?
It's one of those things, like
these excuses for them.
Like, Richard Pryor fans, if you're a fan of Richard Pryor for his stand-up, the films of Gene Wilder don't have an awful lot for you. But they're the first things I saw with Richard Pryor.
Yeah, me too.
And
Hear No Evil, See No Evil.
Yeah, yeah. And
Stir Crazy.
What's Stir Crazy? Yeah, Stir Crazy is really funny.
Yeah, I like them all.
Yeah.
But there are sort of, they do have to tend to come up, like you were saying, have to come up with excuses for them to be together when really, like, come the 90s, if they'd been made 10 years later, people would have been like, let's just forget about these, they're just mates.
Yeah, I mean, Judd Apatow has kind of fucking taken that ball and ran with it. Have you seen the trailer for his Gary Shandling documentary that he's putting out?
No, I didn't even know he was making it.
A Gary Shandling.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Oh,
no, I haven't seen the trailer.
It looks amazing. Like, you know?
Well, didn't he have like hours and hours of material?
He just wrote all the time. Like, and literally, Judd Apatow like inherited his fucking notebooks. Like, it's a big trunk full of notebooks. Like, you know, which is I really like Gary Shandling though. I like his stuff, and I really, when I was a kid, I really loved. This is the theme, the Gary Show. Have you ever watched that? No,
no, I've heard the theme. I've heard it's the pretty good. Like, theme. Okay.
It's not unlike fucking, you know, it's got a bit of Annie Hall to it. Like, you know, he's interacting with the audience and that, like, you know, but, and then obviously the Larry Sanders Show. See, Jeffrey Tambor got sacked from whatever show he's on.
Yeah, Trans.
For Carry On. Parent. Yeah.
He's denying it vociferously, I believe.
Yeah, and David Cross has come out and said, I'm with Jeffrey or whatever, you know.
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, David Cross is with him.
Yeah, well, David Cross is right about almost everything.
No, has he been wrong? Once I thought he was wrong, but he was mistaken. poor old Jeffrey. He's coming out guns blazing now in France.
Well, I mean, if he's innocent, then fair play to him. Like, you know, he's not just taking it lying down. Like, you know, but he's in a lot of stuff I like. You know, obviously fucking Larry Sanders. Not the biggest Arrested Development fan, but I wouldn't like to see it go the way of fucking, you know.
Cosby Show.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's a loss. The Cosby Show is a loss.
Yeah, but he should have thought about that.
He should, I suppose. But, The Death of Stalin was the last thing I saw him in, I think.
Oh, have you watched The Death of Stalin?
I want to see it in the cinema.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Were we talking about that? Oh, we must have talked about it.
Oh, man, it's brilliant.
I know they're showing it in the town hall, or have shown it in the town hall, depending on if I've been keeping a close eye on the website.
What do you mean?
They do, like, afternoon movies or evening movies, like, very, like, once a week or something.
I didn't even know.
And The Death of Stalin is one of them. I don't know if it's been on. It might have been on already. But aren't they doing New Partridge as well?
I laughed so hard. Probably. The last one was a big hit, I believe.
That fucking... Emmanuel Iannucci's got kind of a fucking touch of the genius about him. Like, everything he's involved in seems to be good. Like, you know.
A lot of people were giving out about... well, no,
that's not true. I'm in the fucking Wittertainment social group on Facebook.
Oh, okay. And, do you get involved?
Occasionally. I came into the defense of MASH there during the week.
I haven't listened to Kermode all year.
Yeah.
I haven't heard an episode.
Really? Well, it's only February.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah, it's alright.
Why were they talking about MASH?
Somebody, just people sort of put up the films they're on, and somebody was like, I don't feel comfortable with this. And I was like, well, you're not supposed to. That is the point.
I believe we spoke about MASH.
I think we covered it in great detail.
Yeah, go back and find... Or no, it's not there anymore. If you wanted, fucking...
Yeah, you can message us.
I was supposed to send Neil O'Connor the episode with him on it, and I totally forgot. Sorry, Neil.
We'll do it, Neil. We'll do it shortly.
Yeah.
Shortly.
It showed up on his Facebook memories and he shared it, and then people were like clicking on the thing going, fucking thing's not there, like, you know. And I was like,
oh, we can put it up.
It costs a fortune to keep those things up there.
Well, it's just, it's because the files are so much bigger now for whatever reason.
Well, it's just twice.
Yeah, but it's more than twice as, it's more than, the files are more than twice as big.
This week I bounced it down to mono just to see would it save any space, and it was exactly the same.
Yeah, so something
it's easier to listen to in mono as well, like, you know.
Is it?
It's like, we're not making pet sounds. It doesn't have to be, you know. Okay,
fair play. Okay, well, you do that this week. Yeah, can you give me another redrop? Thank you. You're a gent.
No worries.
That's
sorry.
That's loads of lashes. That's loads of lashes. Thank you very much.
Ginger ale.
Yeah, just you. We just talk amongst yourselves, listeners.
Well, that's this fucking swap sorted for next week. Like, are you getting fed up with getting albums as swaps?
I won't be fed up with pet sounds. Pet sounds will be fine. The other one, I will come to that. Okay. That's what I was saying. There is a villain in this that which makes it, marks it out as a kid's film, really, at heart. There is a villain, a henchman, an evil henchman.
The cowboy.
No, Mr. Igo.
Oh, okay.
Who has only one hand. And on his other hand,
his finger is a gun.
He has like this weird USB port wrist that he plugs blowtorches into, and as you say, hand shaped guns. And all sorts of crazy fucking
shit.
Yeah,
he can drive.
Yeah, he can drive fine with it. But there is one scene where he attaches a vibrator. And I had no recollection of that.
I must have not paid attention to that.
Your mom calls up the doctor and she says, I'm afraid we're a little busy right now. And she hangs up the phone and she turns around and it's Mr. Igo. And he just clicks something into his wrist. And then suddenly it just goes, you can't see his wrist, but he clicks something into his wrist. And then it just goes,
oh my god,
and he moves across to her and it's like, really? I didn't now when I was fucking 11 that went completely over my head.
Also, if it was on fucking telly in the afternoon, I'm sure it was edited, you know.
You don't see anything.
Yeah, but still, that's like, I remember,
I mean, there's no way to misinterpret it, but you don't see anything.
When I was a kid, I had a Jonesboro copy of Jonesboro, to people who fucking have not been introduced to the wonders of Jonesboro who aren't from Dundalk.
The wonders of Jonesboro are not there anymore.
No, they're not. But it was a market on the border when we were kids, mm-hmm, that sold bootleg Everton.
Everything you could imagine.
Anything and everything.
It was like the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory of corporate infringement.
Of terrorist funding bootleggers. Yeah. But there was literally like tracksuits.
Oh, at least we can laugh about it.
Booze. Fucking.
Anything you wanted.
Anything. For half the price you'd pay for it.
Once I saw a bong in the shape of Yoda's head.
Of course you did.
I didn't get it. To this day I regret I didn't pick that up.
Can you imagine having that in your house?
Oh, it's just one of those things that you'd use once and then be like,
yeah, it's something you'd have to get rid of now, and you think, Jesus, do I recycle it? Like, what do I do with it?
What do I
like,
do with my Yoda's head bong?
But it used to be great for fuck. I don't think we can accept this. This is, I used to work in a stall in Galway that sold like hash pipes and bongs and stuff like that. And I didn't realise, but I was supposed to be IDing people when I was selling them stuff. I was selling shit to like 14-year-olds.
What do you mean? Like, are you older? I'm sorry, you must be 18 to buy this illegal contraband.
Well, no, it wasn't selling weed, but it was selling bongs and pipes and stuff. Like,
for tobacco.
Well, yeah, like obviously that wasn't made totally clear, but I thought, well, they're just implements. Oh, like, I was selling them to fucking kids, like, you know. And a guy came back with his mates, a guy who I'd sold shit to the previous week. And I was like, oh, lads, I'm going to have to see some ID if he's want to buy something. And your man was only 14 or something. He's like, oh, yeah, is your boss watching? Is he? Because he was another lad that had a stall directly across from me. And I was looking after the stall with all the hash pipes and stuff.
Right,
in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, no, I shouldn't have sold you that shit that I sold. Just fucking consider yourself lucky and have it on your toes now, lads. Come on.
On your way, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we learned these lessons eventually.
Why are we talking about Jonesboro?
I
had a Jonesboro copy because they sold bootleg videos.
Oh, okay.
I had a Jonesboro copy of The Mask.
Oh, yeah.
And years later, I saw it again on Sky. And you know the bit when he's making balloon animals?
Yeah.
And he's pulling balloons out of his pockets and stuff, and he reaches into one pocket and pulls out a condom and he goes, wrong pocket, and throws it over his shoulder. I hadn't seen that in my original video of it because it wasn't there.
Oh.
It was cut out. It must have been some kind of matinee of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
when
yeah,
I saw
yeah.
it years later, I was like, this wasn't in my fucking Jonesboro version of this.
It is weird when I was watching it this week, Inner Space. It is weird how much of it came back to me. Like, it was just one of those things that I fucking imbibed consistently as a kid. Like,
yeah.
You know? And a lot of it stayed in my head, you know? It was a strange one.
Like, I know kids watch films like that, though, don't they? Like, a kid will become obsessed with a film and watch it 50 times, like, you know?
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, I did, yeah. 50 conservatively, probably, for Inner Space. And the reason Inner Space is in my head, like, is because I did a thing where you put up, like, your top 10 films or something of all time, and instead of being like, I can't tell you my top 10 films, but I'm going to try and get, like, do a snapshot of through my life, what film was my favorite film at 10, and what film was my favorite film at 15, and what film was my favorite film at 20, and all the rest. So I tried to do that. And Inner Space was one of them that I put on, which I kind of didn't think much of. I didn't think anybody would get it. And then when the list went up, people kind of weirdly, a lot, or just more people than I would have expected, kind of weirdly went, oh, Inner Space, yeah, do you remember Inner Space? And I was like, yes, I do. I'm surprised anybody else does, but here we are.
Well, I mean, it had some pretty big movie stars in it, like, you know, for the time.
It did. Well, was Dennis Quaid ever a big movie star?
No, but Meg Ryan and Martin Short were.
Meg Ryan was, Martin Short was, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were very funny, you know, and apparently Dante had it in his head, like, best of all possible worlds, what he would have wanted to do was, you know, make the version of Inner Space where Dean Martin was injected into Jerry Lewis, and that was how he sort of sold the whole thing.
And
you can kind of see it, like, you know.
Do you have any kind of fondness for Jerry Lewis?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. When I was a very small kid.
It's fucking annoying.
Everybody seems to be.
Anytime I think of him, I just think about. You know, that's just the sound I think of when I think of Jerry Lewis.
I have an enormous. Well, he kind of made that sound a fair bit.
He was a pretty despicable man as well, wasn't he?
Was he?
No, he didn't.
Jerry Lewis?
I think he was just an arsehole. I don't think he was like a.
He was a tough talker in real life. He was like this old hard-bitten sort of. You know,
he was definitely the softer side of that, or the harder side of that duo.
Yeah.
Like, Dean Martin was probably a laugh if you met him in real life.
I'd say he was effortlessly charming.
Have you ever seen the clip of them with Bob Newhart doing the wig sketch?
Yeah, yeah.
And he can't fucking keep it
together.
That
is so funny. That's brilliant.
And Bob Newhart says, he breaks character for a minute and says something along the lines of, do you ever have this issue with Jerry where you just couldn't stop laughing? And Dean goes, we never had material this good.
It's good. Still, I would watch the version of this with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. But then I quite like Jerry Lewis, so there we go.
I don't like Jerry Lewis at all.
He's a holdover from when I was very, very young.
It's like the Three Stooges, and I just don't, you know, I don't get it.
It is weird. I probably have more affection for Jerry Lewis than the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
The Three Stooges are probably better, but it was Jerry Lewis I
have more
watch.
Affection for Chicken Pox than I do for Jerry Lewis, to be fair, so.
I used to watch it. I mean, I think that was just how they kept me quiet when I was a very young kid. Like, I was 3 or 4. Just, you know.
Sticking from Sunday the flubber or whatever. Like.
Sunday afternoon. You know, Cinderfella's on now.
Okay.
It's just the kind of me, you know. It's just the kind of me.
Yeah.
I was, I was a very easy babysit, I would imagine.
It sounds like it, yeah. I think I probably was as well. Because I could sit, like. My mom says at a very early age, like, I learned how to, like, work the video and all that shit, like, you know. So I think I was probably similarly entertained.
Yeah. But that was, I mean, you kind of need it. Nature compensates because my sister, you gotta keep an eye on that bitch.
I take it she doesn't listen.
I hope not. No, she's a wonderful bitch. And in many ways, I'm sure, as a babysitter, you got better crack out of Sinead.
Kept you awake, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And you weren't thinking of fucking flubber again. Yeah. Inner Space again.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, but you did occasionally think, oh my God, where did she go? Oh my God, has she run away again? She had a tendency to run away.
She was Bart and you were Lisa.
Yes, it was very much that situation. a lot of my childhood memories have family members running around the countryside looking for Sinead. You know.
That's kind of funny.
What's the kind of her?
Do you know that See, this has given me another kind of possible swap. Now, do you know that Bob Newhart, his that stand-up album that made him really famous is something like his second ever performance?
Really?
Yeah. He was a radio guy.
I listened to that recently.
The Button Down. Not recently, last 2 or 3 Bob years. Newhart.
Yeah, last 2 or 3 years.
He was...
It's very funny.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, he was a radio guy and kind of wrote sketches with a mate of his where there was two lads talking on the phone. And then he started at parties and stuff like that, just doing the sketches on his own without the other lad on the phone. Like, you know, so somehow someone fucking heard it and wanted him to do a stand-up show. And it was like something like his second show. He booked 2 performances in the same night in some club in, I think it was Texas or somewhere.
Right.
And the first one was a disaster. Oh. And if they didn't get it in the second one, they didn't have the album. And he just fucking nailed it in the second one, his second ever gig.
Wow.
And it's one of the most renowned stand-up albums of all time.
He's very funny. That sketch with Dean Martin is genuinely...
Yeah, it's really good.
It is just one of those things that's sort of like infectiously funny. It's like a 1970s Parkinson Billy Connolly interview. It's just, you can't help but laugh at it. Like,
that's fuck yeah. Those Parky Billy interviews are fucking gold.
Mm-hmm.
Even the very last one when he comes in and Billy's like, "Don't go. What am I gonna watch?"
He's very funny. Billy Connolly was gold on that kind of shit.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good late ones as well. That's
what he actually wasn't bad with Gay Byrne, yeah.
Look, Owl Hands, like Parky or Gay, knew you just
press play.
Just press play and then sit back.
Like, and you can see in even some of the more recent Parkinson interviews of Billy Connolly where he goes to say something. "Well, Billy, I see that you..." "Oh, I forgot to tell you! I was in Zimbabwe!" You know, or whatever. Like, you know.
Or the fucking prescription windshield thing. That was... I heard that on the Late Late. I don't know, was that ever in his act?
Yeah, it's in one of his DVDs, been, sure. Yeah. It's probably his best video, actually. It's live in 1994. It's at the end of that. The one where he does the whole bit about Toblerones and potatoes of the night.
"And sweetie, that hurts you. Who'd invent that? Them fuckers."
And then he's talking about potatoes of the night. "I expected Leonard Cohen to be singing about them."
Yeah, that was so funny. "Oh, we've Galway farmers going out at midnight with wee miners' helmets looking for them.
I nearly got that one. It ran down its wee hole."
"Oh, it's a cracker. You should have seen the size of it."
"It's a nocturnal potato native to Ireland."
Oh, he was majestic, wasn't he, in his day? We already did a Billy Connolly. It makes you regret having had done a Billy Connolly special and never to be able to do it again. We did two Bob Dylan ones.
Yeah, we'll probably do a third, I'm sure.
Will we?
Yeah, fuck it, why not? It's always desire.
Yeah, we could do the whole thing. We could do the whole shebang.
That's like I don't think a fucking week goes by when I don't stick on fucking something off Blood on the Tracks or, you know.
It's a good album, isn't it?
"Our Conversation was Short and Sweet." I love that one.
There was, for reasons...
And I didn't like that, sorry to interrupt you, but like that song until I saw Glenn Hansard sing it.
Oh well, I think I got a lot of
because the recording of it on Blood on the Tracks is really fucking shitty, like, you know. But okay. I saw Glenn Hansard play solo in the Town Hall in Galway, one of the best gigs I've ever seen. And Dylan was playing the same night.
He can be good.
He can't. I think he's. I was listening to him on a podcast today, and I think he's just like, this is the thing people don't talk about when they talk about Glenn Hansard. But he's not a good songwriter. His stuff is pretty dull as songs.
I like it.
But he's like, when it comes to heavy lifting with shitty material, he's like the Hulk. Like, you know, the songs aren't that good.
Glenn,
you know?
Smash.
Glenn Mad. But he was playing in Galway the same night as Dylan, and I had the choice, and I went to see Glenn Hansard, because at that point I was like, fucking Dylan, a wee man behind a keyboard. Like, I don't think I have any relation to that now. But
I don't know if I go back to him now.
He sang "You're a Big Girl Now," Glenn Hansard, and he did a fucking great version of it. In somebody's room, you know. It was just like, it was a really good version of it, and it made me go back and listen to that song and be like, yeah, it's a shitty version of it on Blood on the Tracks, but it is a good song, you know.
I was on like a date. Is that a thing? Is that a thing people do?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been on one, but I hear they're nice.
Of course you have been on one.
Been on one.
No, you haven't. You're married.
Yeah, but...
Well, pull the fucking finger out then and take her on a fucking date.
We met at a comedy club.
You can go on a date with your wife, Dan. I'm told.
We go out all the time.
Yeah, well, there you go. You go on dates. But anyway, I was on a date.
How endeavor?
I was on a date with someone who I had never met before, really. I'd been texted. We'd been sort of in communication. But we were talking about, she's a bit of a music head. You'd like her, actually. But she was chatting away about music. And really, the only thing I could contribute to was getting really quite quick and early with, I hate John Lennon.
Just in case.
Just put our markers down here. I think John Lennon's a dickhead.
Well, he was. He was indisputably a dickhead.
Well, anyway, that was where I started. But we mentioned the Frames. I mentioned the Frames. She was talking about gigs and the best gigs and what gigs have you gone to. And I was talking about the Frames. And she went... I was like...
That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, well, I was like, do you not like the Frames? She's like, no, I like the Frames. It's like... Frames fans.
Oh, Frames fans are the fucking worst.
I was like, you're right, they are the worst. She did that. That exact thing.
I remember my girlfriend at the time, we went to a gig, a Frames gig, and lots of people going, shh. And she just, shh is a noise as well.
It's proper order, right. I remember the last time I went to Frames, all the lads left early. Because
it's kind of a little, if you're of a certain age and you've seen the Frames a few times, you're like, yeah, I get it, transcendence, magic, whatever.
Well, they all left and I was like, no, I'm hanging about, I'm here at the bitter end, I'm hardcore me. So then when I was there on my own, I sort of moshed my way up the pit to the front, and I ended up standing in front of some people who, in a mosh pit, by the way,
shushing,
were like, tapped me on the shoulder and said, excuse me, we've been standing here since the start of the concert. And I said, oh, okay.
One of the tallest men in Dundalk stands in front of them.
I just turned around and
fuck it, man,
kept on dancing
completely. But like, as in speaking as a fucking musician who's played gigs, that's what you want. You want people enjoying it. Like,
you want people appreciating, standing there immobile, appreciating it on every level it's possible to simultaneously.
Oh, it's the worst.
You certainly don't want somebody going woo, woo!
And you want to, sometimes with these gigs with the Frames fans shushing you the whole time, you kind of want to say, like, you know, he is like screaming his fucking head off and smashing away on that guitar like someone is going to take it off him, like, you know.
Yeah.
How is me going, it's a really good gig, isn't it? How is that fucking things up, like, you know?
Yeah. Well, in fairness, these people couldn't see past me.
Yeah, but it's just fucking step two fucking paces to the left. They would have been fine, like, you know.
There was very much that
such a load in of the shite,
back of my like, head. Like, I was like, you could have got seated. Also, by the way, I must have had 10 years on these cunts. Like, if I can have,
you weren't there, man.
They fucking weren't.
Yeah, like,
for
I said,
list. Like,
I saw
you
the Frames
came to
live
this
in 1996. Like,
they
you
came
know
to it so late. They didn't have the fucking awakening, the post-college setlist awakening, which makes me a Johnny Come Lately very much.
I was
but
5 years ahead of that. I saw them in secondary school, I was a Johnny Come Lately because I was like, I loved fucking God Bless Mom when it came out, and
oh,
then they're playing
song
in Rock the
like
Planet, and we were
like,
oh, I have to go see the Frames. God Bless Mom. And even we were fucking Johnny Come Latelys because, you know, we didn't get on board with fucking Fitzcarraldo or whatever, you know.
Well, you have every right not to get on board with those albums because the albums aren't that good.
No, they're not. They're not good albums.
The Frames, as wanky as it sounds, the Frames are a live band. They just are.
Also, every album has 3 or 4 exceptionally good songs on it. But see, it's again, it's these Americans, man. They've lapped up the Glenn Hansard thing. I was listening to the there's an NPR show called The World Cafe, and they were interviewing Glenn Hansard, and he was singing stuff off his new album. Fucking bog standard fucking tunes you and I could write, like, you know. And this woman was ready to have his fucking children.
Well, thank you.
Like, you know.
Well, he's soulful, Danny.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Glenn, you're so soulful.
It's no accident that when you see him live and he's playing solo, half the set is covers. He's a great song man.
He's a performer.
Yeah,
he's
exactly,
a natural born performer. His natural habitat is on the stage in front of people.
It is, but there's no one in the audience shouting up going, in this boat together, you know, or whatever, like, you know, because no one.
Maybe not tonight.
Half the time they're shouting up for him to sing fucking covers, like, you know.
Yeah, he's good at the covers though.
But he. You know, it's not like I.
The
Owl
Triangle. Does he end gigs with that in the States?
He does the Owl Triangle, yeah.
But he does that in Ireland. Does that work anywhere else?
I think I've seen YouTube videos of him doing that song in the States, yeah.
Fair
but bit. He does, like, he does Pixie songs, he does weird Surely Bowie people covers.
Don't know
like,
it in the States, though. When he does it in Ireland, people sing along, like.
Yeah.
Because it's a party song in Ireland.
Like. But then in the States, if he sings it and people don't know it, it's a spiritual. Do you know what I mean? They fucking lap that shit up over
Which
there.
Which is fair enough. Maybe it is a spiritual. Who am I to fucking say it's not spiritual?
This interview I was listening to earlier, he was talking about how he went on some fucking journey from Ireland to Spain in some boat, you know, like with these other old... And I was just like, yeah, of course you fucking did. At what point in your fucking day are you not being fucking Johnny Inspiration? Like, he annoys me so much. Even though he's great, he annoys
it's
me.
It's like his Ziggy Stardust. Johnny Inspiration.
Johnny Inspiration. And the spiders from Dublin.
And the dickheads from Dublin. He's an interesting guy. Maybe I was wrong then about that, about the L triangle. It probably is a spiritual. It is one
In
of
way
those
it
things.
Is, like,
I remember Joe Rogan being absolutely... He was talking to
Russell Brand, actually. So there's one for you to avoid. But... I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Russell Brand's Wedding. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, sure.
I love that.
Yeah,
that That's brilliant. Just a good song. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, they were talking about Conor McGregor. And one of the things he said that, you know, what makes Conor McGregor is, you know, the Irish and how the Irish get behind him. And he mentioned as this thing that he found inconceivable, that it was just something that he didn't understand how it happened. If you're in Las Vegas when McGregor's fighting, and you go into whatever fucking hotel it is, the Mirage or whatever it is, you find it'll be like Irish guys, and they'll just be like singing, like they'll just be like singing, and they won't have rehearsed. They'll just be singing.
Like you rehearse a session.
It was that made me just like, oh, he's talking about a sing song.
Pubs in America aren't the same fucking animals as they are here, like, you know.
But, it cannot possibly be the case that you cannot in America find a fucking sing-song anywhere, like.
I don't know, man. It's a fucking... It's really dry. Like, the bars are, like... You go to watch something or to have a meal and then you kind of leave. Like, you know... Like, if you're in a big city like New York or whatever, then that's different. Like, you know, but... If you're just in any town USA at a pub... They're kind of trying to get you out. Like, they're trying to get you to drink up and fuck off so the next person could come in and tip them, like, you know.
Okay, fair play, but... The idea that he found it so incomprehensible that people would sing on a whim,
yeah.
Like...
I miss, weird. It's a long time since I was involved in anything like that, like, you know, like in a pub. I know we had a fucking really good sing-song here a few weeks ago, like, you know, but...
Oh, we did, actually. That was good, wasn't it?
It was really good, yeah.
Oh, it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Like,
Dan, I'm going to try and get everybody back out on Paddy's Day. Because last year on Paddy's Day was the best session I had in a long time. It was one of those kind of impromptu legendary sessions.
Cool. It's not too impromptu if it's Paddy's Day, though.
No, but we kind of went out late. Okay. So for Paddy's Day... Well, not super late. Early, actually. But not Paddy's
late,
Day.
Late, i.e. it wasn't 11:30 in the morning.
Exactly. It was about 7 o'clock, and we sat down in the bartender, and we were sitting at the front of the bartender, which was packed, and we started singing, and it... Now, they excused a lot because it was Paddy's Day. Number one, because it was Paddy's Day. And number two, because we were buying exotic drinks, which were just ridiculous drinks. But, you know, this one tastes like open fruits. Taste this one. That kind of shit.
Yeah.
And we were there until it was like, oh man, I know what time it was. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Like, we successfully avoided getting the wee house in trouble. Not that they did anything.
Well,
the thing that absolves
us from any blame in that scenario, Niall, is that the wee house. I wasn't talking about the pub, the wee house. I was just in a wee house.
Oh, you were in a wee house.
Yeah, tiny it was.
Yes, and I wasn't in a beer. I wasn't in the beer keeper. I was in a beer keeper. You know the place where they keep the beer?
Yeah. Well,
I was in the beer keeper.
Fucking where else would you be?
Exactly. You'd be in a place where they keep the beer. And it was like 2 o'clock. They asked us to leave. And by that state, now we were in a hoop. Like, we were going out trying to harmonize to
the wind.
Bohemian Rhapsody. It was ridiculous. Like, it was, I can't remember.
Harmonizing uncorrected personality traits. Sorry.
No, listen, do you know what? I'm not... Do you know what? We'll get to it. Let me just finish up on Innerspace, right? Innerspace has a special place in my heart because I came to it as a kid.
And because it's a medical condition. You have Innerspace heart.
I have Innerspace heart. You have
VHS wedged in there.
But I think it's nicely done. It's nicely built. It takes its time to set up and you know exactly what's happening. You know, somehow Dennis Quaid has to... have some meaning given back to his life that has become rudderless. Meg Ryan has to, this is not necessarily feminist 101, but Meg Ryan has to make her man take responsibility for his life. And Martin Short has to learn that you can't fixate on how you're going to die all the time.
Do you know what? This is going to sound fucking wacky, but I actually took something from Martin Short's character in this. You know, because I'm a man who's prone to nervousness and, you know, whatever, like, and like literally the most in my job, the most question I'm asked is, are you all right?
What?
I'm asked, are you all right? Maybe 3 times a day by different
customers.
People. No, by just people.
Oh, okay. With. Good enough. Jesus
but
Christ.
Literally, like, I went for a walk at break time during the week and I came back from my walk. And I was fucking listening to Robin Hitchcock on my walk, and I was like, I came back and I was like, oh, I'm glad I went out now. That kind of fucking cleared my head now. I'm going back into the fucking bear pit now, clear head, etc. And I met one of the women I know that I work with on the way in. She just looked at me and went, are you all right?
I was God.
What do I have to do? Like,
I wouldn't worry about it overly. Like, I wouldn't be waiting for a tiny man to be injected into your bloodstream
to teach
you how to be a hero.
Of course not. No, but like, I heard, did you hear Duncan Jones on WTF during the week?
No.
But,
of course not. I don't listen to WTF.
He was talking about, because Mark Maron's not like, he's not a comics guy, he's not a sci-fi guy, whatever. Yeah. And he was saying,
it's hard to really pin down what kind of guy he is, isn't it?
It is. And obviously, Innerspace is not fucking sci-fi per se, like, you know. But he was saying...
Sci-fi as much as it now, it's like...
Well, I suppose, yeah. But he was... Mark Maron was kind of almost like a little bit taking the piss going, fucking space and all this. Like, why is it in space? And he was going, like, I don't recognize that as a story I can relate to or whatever, like, you know. And
what, is he talking about Moon?
No, they were talking about Mute. Is his new film.
Oh, yeah, I have to check it. It's a series, isn't it?
Is it a series? Oh, I thought it was a film.
Oh,
it
might be a film.
Paul Rudd's in it.
It's a Netflix thing, isn't it?
I didn't know that. Oh,
it's on Netflix, yeah. Because okay. I saw it and I thought, oh, that kind of looks up my alley. And then I saw it was Duncan Jones and I was like, oh, I'll definitely fucking check
that
out.
Oh, cool, okay, I didn't realise that.
But
I
took
it was a film.
I took it to be a series and you know what? Maybe it's not. Maybe it is a Netflix original film.
Okay.
I watched half of Bright, by the way.
Oh, the Will Smith thing?
Yeah.
Okay. It looks shite. It just looks like Alien Nation.
Well, no. It looks... To you, it looks shite. To me, it looks... Oh! And then you turn it on and you go... Oh.
Okay, fair enough.
This couldn't be lazier or more derivative.
But he's asking Duncan Jones about, like... He was saying, like, oh, my new film is about this man struggling with X, Y, and Z. And Mark Maron was kind of like, why don't you just tell that story without all the space and everything? And he was kind of like, well, science fiction is a way of looking at these things, but doing it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was kind of thinking, this sounds fucking ridiculous. But just because of the week I had, I was like, I was really relating to Martin Short in this film. And then at the end of the film, when he kind of let things go, the bit where he's talking about... Your man tells him, Dennis Quaid tells Martin Short he has a tumor so that he'll produce fucking stomach acid to burn somebody.
Take that, Mr. Igo, you cunt.
And you're just
that's
like,
what you wanted.
But no, but I wasn't thinking, oh, Dennis Quaid, what a way to fucking produce results. Good on you. I was thinking, fucking Martin Short has to go through that now. Thinking he has a tumor, producing stomach acid to burn a bad guy.
Martin Short had his head.
Did I spit? Sorry.
No, huh?
Oh, sorry, I thought I spat.
No, Martin, I don't know, did you? Maybe, I don't know.
Excuse me.
That's allowed. Martin Short had his head in Meg Ryan. By the way, 1987 era, Meg Ryan's lap at that point. Martin Short had little to be annoying him.
That's a good point.
I'd take stomach out. I'd be like, look, Dennis Quaid could try as he might. I am not a fucking man of the world. I'm not an action man. But Dennis Quaid would have had his work cut out of him if I had my head in Meg Ryan's lap and he was trying to make me create stomach acid. Actually, he wouldn't. All he'd have to have said is, Niall, where do you think this is going to go? At which point I'd be like, oh God, okay.
Enough said.
Meg, I'm going to sit up now, Meg.
But he has that, look, it has that sort of, again, that sort of childish thing where there is that, spoilers, Frankie, there is that period where, Frank.
Frank's cool with it. Frank listens to the show.
If I didn't
also,
think.
Frank sent me, he sent me a clip earlier on of, I think it was John Grant singing with Elbow. I don't think I'm as big a fan of Elbow as you are, Frank. I'll just put that
out
there.
My brother loves Elbow.
They're not a bad band by any stretch, but it's been a bit emoty for my liking.
They're just one
not,
of those,
not a stitch of crack about
they're
them.
They're just like, sort of, I kind of think of them as paisley bands. They're sort of like, they're just...
It's all, there's a lot of feels. Too many feels.
Yeah, they're just like, it's like a blue wash or something to everything, to their lives.
It's like...
What does that even mean? What's a blue wash?
But I know what you're saying. It's all feels. And like, even the likes of Dylan, if Dylan's feeling too much in a song, there'll be a funny line in there. And Leonard Cohen and these
you
kind of people.
You need that.
Yeah, yeah.
You need that.
There's some of those songs on Blood on the Tracks. And what was I listening to during the week? Stuck inside a mobile with
the
Memphis
Blues again.
But Dylan is audibly laughing at his own lyrics, like, you know.
Shakespeare, he is in the alley.
But that's one of the good verses.
With
but you've got the ones where, like, what's the one about the post office and his granddad and...
Oh, God, there's
some
weird
of those,
verses. In that
some
song.
Of those verses are shite. But...
Yeah, but
like
some of them are awesome.
The Ruthie says, come see her. You have to hang about for 6 minutes before you hear
that's
that
one
verse.
Of the last, but that's the best. That's maybe my
it's
favorite
the best
verse.
Verse in the song.
Ruthie says, come see her in a honky-tonk lagoon.
But you have to...
You can watch a waltz for free
beneath the
Panamanian
moon.
And I said, oh, come on now. You know about my debutante.
She says,
your
debutante
just knows
what
you
need,
honey.
I know what you want.
Oh, Ruthie.
But before that is the fucking verse about, like... He cursed me when I proved
you.
It's like,
is it not
I
even you
to?
Can doubt?
You do
and
listen
lit a
to
fire on Main Street and shot it full of ooh.
And even that's from another verse. Like,
yeah, yeah,
you know, and,
yeah. I don't know that song very well. Like,
but it's like
no, that's not true. I've listened to it a billion times. That's on fucking Blonde on Blonde, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's one of my most
like
listened to Dylan.
The most albums. Immaculate 4.5 minute song buried in an 8 minute song. But that's
yeah.
what you kind of like it because you
yeah,
can
okay,
tell
that's true.
Dylan's. Throwing the shit verses in front of really good verses to make you fucking work for it, like, you know.
But also
he's taking the piss most of the time.
At the time I was listening to that, I was also learning guitar and I was like, okay, I could play that now.
Yeah.
And I'll get 3 minutes of an awesome party song out of this. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna bother learning all those other verses, but I'll get to Ruthie pretty fucking quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
People would be like, oh,
Ruthie,
yeah, Ruthie.
Shakespeare. And like what's there's other good verses in
there's a good there's a few it's not a bad song, like it's a good
like,
song.
Like obviously the first verse is very good, like in,
yeah, anyway.
You know.
But yeah, there is taking it back to Martin Short. but there is that sort of very kind of childish moment where spoilers, Frank, Tuck is out of his body for a little while for a short period. Towards the end of the film, but he doesn't realize it.
And he's being brave all on his own.
And he's being brave all on his own. He's like, Tuck will give me the strength of 10 men. And he's kicking asses all around. And then at the end, he suddenly realizes, oh my God, Tuck's not in me anymore.
And why is he on his own? Because he fucking shifted Meg Ryan.
Badly caught.
Dennis
Jack.
Quaid away in through the Meg Ryan's mouth on a wave of saliva.
Yeah. Yeah. It can get icky when you think of it in those respects.
Yeah.
And then I was like, why put him back in Jack? Mr. Igo.
There
was
a reason for it now, but I forget.
He just couldn't talk. He couldn't talk to Meg Ryan because he left his speaker on Jack's ear.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was like, okay, once you know where he is, that's all right. Don't put him back in with the fucking psychopath who's out to kill him. Don't put him back in the same place, like...
Yeah. But
anyway, that was something that occurred to me this time that never occurred to me in any of the 70 million times I'd watched it before. Martin Short's funny, isn't he?
Yeah, Martin Short is... Have you ever seen... There's a clip on YouTube of Martin Short and Larry David at some kind of telethon where they're answering phones. Celebrities answer phones. And Larry David's answered talking to someone on the phone. I guess the two of them were mates back in the day because Larry David was a writer on Saturday Night Live.
They were all both Saturday Night
Live.
When
Martin Short was on it, yeah. For the 1 year he was there.
Was he only on it for a year?
Yeah, well, he quit. You know the episode of Seinfeld where George quits his job and storms out and then realizes that he's got no job?
Yeah.
That is almost word for word Larry David quitting Saturday Night Live. And apparently he just went back the next Monday morning and said nothing and it was fine.
Martin Short.
But, oh, sorry, I was going to say, there's a really funny clip on YouTube somewhere of Larry David answering the phone at the telethon and Martin Short talks to the camera. He's going, now Larry's talking to someone on the phone right now, but I'm going to take the phone out of his hand and pretend to be Larry to whoever's on the other side of the phone. It's very funny. Like, you know,
okay, I'll check it out. Stick it up on the Facebook
page. If I can find
page.
It, yeah, I'll stick it up.
I keep promising to stick shit up on the Facebook page. Yeah, I say that about 70 dogs. Times. Oh, yeah, I'll do that then. Yeah, okay, right, for next week you see the dog. But Martin Short kind of became massive. Not a lot of Saturday Night Live guys that happens to, really.
Well,
obviously Eddie Murphy, John Belushi, and those guys. But then,
Martin Short's very likable.
He is very likable
as a person. When you like, he's just like
I've seen him interviewed.
A talented man from Canada who managed to make it in Saturday Night Live. Like, and
he's a goner, though, isn't he?
What do you
That's
mean?
Kind of the essence of his humor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but
he's a slapstick guy.
I don't mind that so much.
On,
like, no.
I know some people can do it. Like,
I don't, but he's funny. Like, he's not a Gurner in the Jerry Lewis mold where you're just like, I'm gonna punch this guy in the face.
Don't think he's a million miles away.
I
from
feel like Martin Short earns your liking first.
I
earns
like
your
Jerry
love.
Lewis. Of course, that's the other thing.
Vile human being.
I don't think he is.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. Really,
I've seen.
You should read up on the Jerry Lewis talk show.
Was it good?
He had a talk show in the 60s. It only lasted 3 episodes or something. But he literally...
Obviously not.
He was literally like, he had... It was
I was a big
insane.
Fan of the Eamon Dunphy talk show, though, and that only lasted one season. I loved it.
I don't know for a fact. Probably not the same kind of thing.
Okay, all right, go on.
But Jerry Lewis probably literally had like controls on the desk where he could control what cameras were filming him. Because he was such a big star at the time, they gave him like insane... free reign over this talk show and what his demands and what he needed to make this the fucking theater where they filmed it had his face carved in the doors and all that sort of shit. Wow. It lasted fucking 3 episodes or something.
Sounds
before
like
they were like, this
waste
is fucking
of money.
Bullshit. Like, you know,
well, see,
the theater is still there. Like, you know?
I remember seeing him on Inside the Actor's Studio, and he is this. Now I found it very kind of. I feel very affectionate towards it, even though he was this like sort of irascible old Jew. He was like a cartoon old Jew. Like, it was.
He cut some of his sons out of his will and all sorts of
did
shit.
Did he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Oh, so he was a nasty piece of work like that.
My memory of what I read is, allegedly, he has 3 sons from a particular marriage that just got cut out of his will altogether.
Holy shit, I hope they took that to court.
But how do you take a dead man to court?
Oh, there has to be fucking estate laws and things that govern you. Surely
if it's his
you're not,
shit, though, like...
Surely you're not allowed to just cut people out of your will, your children.
You're entirely allowed to do that.
Are you allowed to do that? Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to do that in Ireland.
Are you not?
I think your children are entitled.
In
Hollywood. In Hollywood, you can do anything you fucking like, baby.
But, yeah, so in a wacky roundabout way, I kind of... I found a lot to relate to in Martin Short in this film due to the week I've had.
Did it teach you a life lesson?
I mean, in theory.
Are you going to go out there and fight industrial saboteurs?
No, I'm just going to go out there and just float on the breeze, man.
All right, good stuff.
No, that gets you nowhere. Gonna jump. Just gets you back to your house.
That's what got me here in the first place.
Also, given the weather we're supposed to have this week, I'm like floating on the breeze is what I should be doing.
Oh, my central heating doesn't work in the cold. It's a design
it
flaw.
Works when it's hot.
Yeah, it's a design flaw. No, after a certain amount of
was
time.
Is it like a joke?
After a certain like temperature, when it gets very, very cold, I have to come down and restart it manually.
Okay. Oh, so you can restart it.
I can restart it, but I like restart it before I go to bed.
Your kitchen is always warm.
Yeah, well, I try to keep it warm to keep it going.
Okay.
But
not that expensive.
Probably, yeah, a wee bit. But
do you pay the? Is it included in your rent?
No,
okay.
I pay. But it's this is probably not something to be discussed on the podcast.
Most likely not. But you know, you can cut it out if you want.
Yeah, I think I might. But there's anyway. Yeah. So Martin Short, we like Martin Short. You've given me stuff to chew over now about Jerry Lewis. Do you know, funny enough, who I was watching on a talk show recently?
Who?
In the last few months, and it was a talk show from the '70s, and he was.
They were the best talk shows.
Spectacular. He was really good. Groucho Marx.
Oh yeah, he was the darling of those fucking shows.
Yeah, but you could still tell why. Like,
yeah,
he was just it wasn't his routine. He wasn't doing bits from his act.
He was just talking.
He was just talking, and he could talk, and that's the kind of guy he was.
He's fucking yeah, like
he was just a naturally witty man.
Well, they were on the stage. They were on the stage three times a day from the age of like fucking 8 or something.
Fair play.
Like,
fair
they
play.
Were just like those Marx Brothers films are really funny, but. They all had their skills, you know. Like there's always a bit in it where fucking Chico or whoever the fuck it is plays the piano, like, and
they were kind of.
Groucho always gets his bit where he's basically talking to himself, like you
it's
know.
It's a stand-up routine. Like.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. But he wasn't a stand-up as such. They were variety performers, like. You
but
know.
You could, a lot of that stuff, you can see how it would work. He's one of the few guys from that era, that you could go back to. You feel like. You could put that on stage now, like, and it would take minimal fucking
and then
alteration.
Didn't Phil Collins call one of his albums "Hello, I Must Be Going"?
Did he?
Hello, I must be going. But he didn't do that song. He did the. He just called the album "Hello, I Must Be Going."
Oh, great!
I must
brilliant.
Be going.
Do you know Lydia? Lydia is brilliant.
What's Lydia?
Lydia or Lydia? Say, have you met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady.
No, but I am going to know it when I get home.
She's got eyes that men adore so, and a torso even more so.
He's a very funny man.
Great, but like, fucking Woody Allen and people like that. Like, his Woody Allen's whole thing comes from Groucho, pretty much. Like, you know,
Groucho
was and fucking,
the,
what's
Groucho
man's
was
name?
The mold.
Mort Saul.
Mort Saul, there's a name you don't hear every day.
No, you don't, do you? But he was kind of more of a political comedian, but he was
a man
like
you don't meet every day.
What's that?
The Pogue song.
The man you don't meet every day.
My name is Jack Stewart. How's it go?
I have no idea. Is that the main drag, or what is that?
No, it's the man you don't meet every day.
I do not know. See,
My name is Jack Stewart. I'm a canny young man and a roving young fella I've been. So be easy and free when you're drinking with me. I'm a man you don't meet every day.
We were playing, there's a song Rory Gallagher and Ronnie Drew did together called The Barley Grape Rag.
Okay.
And we were playing it on the radio this morning, and while the song was on.
He died in 1995. I was listening to him today, funny enough.
I was listening.
That's later than you'd think, isn't it?
No, that makes sense. I was listening to Jerry Ryan the morning he died, and Jerry
really,
Ryan
yeah.
song with Rory Gallagher, yeah.
Fair play.
I miss Jerry Ryan. I know people don't like him, but I really like Jerry Ryan.
I didn't like him. I think my father poisoned me against him.
I liked him. Look, I get that he was a twat, but.
He was a twat.
I know a lot of twats, and I like them. Like, you know.
I was going to cut all the twats out of my life. I'd be sitting at home alone every night.
Yeah, we better get on to fucking Robin.
What was I going to say, though? Robbie, oh, yeah,
oh,
and we were
on,
talking
Ray
about on. Ronnie Drew, and someone said, do you think Ronnie Drew's a good singer? And we were thinking about it for a while.
He's a distinctive
singer. We were kind of saying he does his thing, but also his singing voice is just his speaking voice.
That's absolutely true.
It's the same thing, like, you know, it's there's no difference, like, you know. And he was singing this song. I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you ever heard the Barley Grape Rag?
No.
Rory Gallagher and Ronnie Drew. I don't care if I get arrested, but tonight's gonna be a ball and chain, something like that, you know.
Do you reckon he ever was arrested? Not Rory Gallagher, Ronnie Drew.
Oh, I would have thought so. Yeah, I'm sure he did something when he was.
Do you think? I also think he's a guy from early on. Was well known.
Well, Bono on a documentary about Ronnie Drew said that Ronnie Drew is the biggest rock star he's ever met.
Well, they were hard living men.
Yeah, like. They really were, like, you know.
Yeah.
Long years ago when men were men and fancied me how long. Lovely Becky Cooper and Maggie's Mary Wong.
That Dubliner stuff is fucking. It's basically Irish fucking punk.
One woman put them all to shame. Just one was worthy of the name. And the name of that dame was Dicey Riley. Poor old Dicey Riley, she had taken to the supper.
Do you want to do the rest of it?
I'll do the whole fucking thing, will I?
Okay, that's pretty good. No, we've got
we're gonna
post-punk London singer-songwriter to get to.
Well, have you said everything you need to say about Innerspace?
Yeah, Martin Short, I hear you, buddy.
Martin Short was amazing. He's very, very funny. Meg Ryan is built for anyone to fall in love with, and Dennis Quaid,
kind of a dick,
kind of like weirdly, kind of almost as if Tom Cruise was trying to do Jack Nicholson or something like that. It's weird.
Do you know, I didn't recognize him at first, and then I was like, oh yeah, it's fucking Dennis. The only thing I've ever really watched Dennis Quaid in was Goodness Gracious, Great Balls of Fire.
Goodness Gracious, Great Balls of Fire.
And it, like, I don't know if he's good or bad in that. He's Jerry Lee Lewis.
He's kind of good in this. The reason I have any affection in me whatsoever for Dennis Quaid is this film, basically. That's the only reason I know Dennis Quaid exists.
I feel exactly the same way about Great Balls of Fire.
Okay. Well, listen, I can only recommend Innerspace incredibly highly. I really do kind of recommend it. I think if you're the kind of person that would watch Innerspace and come away from it thinking, what a waste of my time, I kind of think you're probably an asshole. I'm sorry, lads. I think you're probably an asshole. There we go. Now you know. It was a definitive industrial moment in that it kind of spelled out that this home video thing was actually something. It was a definitive sort of effects moment because it did stuff. And apparently some people like Joe Dante. So there we go.
I like Joe Dante. And it must be the only, it must be the first like non-horror. Like, I feel like in the early days of VHS, it was basically for people who wanted to watch films where people get chopped up.
I mean, that is essentially it. There was the whole Video Nasty scare, and people were very sort of touchy about what this thing was.
It's very interesting, the whole Video Nasties thing.
It is. But then along comes...
Again, Kieran McNulty fucking one day dropped a DVD in my fucking letterbox that was a documentary about the Video Nasties.
I would say, you know what? Kieran McNulty would be a good man to come on to and talk about that, I would say.
Yeah.
I might just say to him.
Yeah.
We could. I could sit here and listen to him talk about
video. He's a learned man about such things.
About such things, absolutely. And so there we go. But I kind of think this was kind of the antidote to that. When you have something that is essentially as inoffensive as just good, clean family fun, leaving aside the vibrator attachment from Mr. Igo's evil hand.
And also, she fucking puts her hand in between Martin Short's legs at one point.
It was the '80s. You were allowed overt sexual references in children's film. What the fuck? Like, here, play some Robin Hitchcock.
Okay, Niall, I got you to listen to an album called I Often Dream of Trains by a singer from Merry Old England called Robin Hitchcock.
Merry Old England?
Started off in a band called The Soft Boys. Jesus, we're getting started on this late.
Yeah, we are super late.
You're not going to like it, so we just keep the negativity.
Do you know what? Don't think I'm so predictable.
All right, I thought you said I didn't like
it. I said... Yeah, I did.
But Robin Hitchcock, in a band called the Soft Boys in the late 70s, did one solo album in the early 80s, thought he was going to quit music, and then basically wrote this album pretty much for himself. And it kind of, people kind of, you know, not in an Adele kind of way, but people did kind of take to it and like it. So we will go with
do you not like Adele,
the title track. I don't dislike her.
I quite like her.
I mean, do I listen to her?
No. Well, I don't really listen to her either, but I'm judging it on one. I like her as a Graham person. Norton, she's a laugh. Like, yeah, she was good crack.
She's a laugh.
Play some Robin Hitchcock.
This is I Often Dream of Trains.
Good stuff.
I often dream of trains when I'm alone. I ride on them into another zone. I dream of them constantly, heading for paradise, or Basingstoke, or Reading. I often dream of trains when I'm awake. They ride along beside a frozen lake.
So that's a wee blast of I Often Dream of Trains off the album of the same name by Robin Hitchcock. A couple of years ago, a little bit longer, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I was watching Sky Arts one night and there was a performance of around that time. Robin Hitchcock did, this album came out in 1984, but then in around...
Oh, was it that late, actually?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Okay. But in around the mid-2000s, he did a performance of it in New York that was put out as a DVD, and that's how I saw it.
Is that the one that's on Spotify, the live version?
Yeah, same
I listened
one.
To that once by accident, in the middle.
Oh, okay, well, it's the same
but
album.
But I was fairly deep into it before I realised, this isn't the same.
It's, and anyway. It's good as well, like, you know, but it's... Yeah. It's, yeah, it, like, I saw it on... And, like, he starts off by, you know, that instrumental at the start of the album, Nocturne? He starts off with a tape player on top of the piano playing that with a microphone in front of it, and that's how the gig starts, and then he comes out and does...
It's pretty lo-fi.
Sometimes I wish I was a pretty girl, you know.
I could ruin myself in the shower! What is that a song about?
Been on my own too long, I don't know left from right. Bloody red bats!
life can be like that.
I honestly took it as...
It's the sound of a fucking single fucking man in his 30s.
Crude as this sounds. Yeah, I took it as mid-30s horniness, like, you know.
Yeah.
Single man.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of knew where he was coming from, but at the same time, it felt like I'd given in.
But
it was a weird album.
Yeah, it is a weird album, it's but that's why weird. I like it. I like it that... Robin Hitchcock, very interesting fucking dude to listen to, being interviewed, very funny. Like, and he said that he was on WTF, and he was saying that he always thought of him, he always modeled himself as a cross between, what was he said, Bob Dylan, Sid Barrett, Bertie Wooster, and Doctor Who. So, I mean, to be
you
fair.
You know what? You know what? That's not a million. It's not a bad description of what I listen to, yeah.
Yeah. I just like I say I caught him one night polka dot shirt doing these tunes live in New York on Sky Arts, like, and I just really, and the tune that really took me, and not because of the lyrics but because of the, in the video he sings it with the three or four lads in the band, and they all do the harmonies, and they all do uncorrected personality traits. And I just thought, that's fucking gas. Like, what's he doing? Like,
it's a weird song.
It is, yeah.
Dan, I didn't, listen to me. Honest to God, cross my heart and hope to die. I'm probably never going to listen to another Robin Hitchcock album.
I'm never going to watch Popeye again, but.
But I didn't come away from it. I came away from The Fall mystified. Like, I came away from The Fall like, what the fuck is, what is happening here? This, I got a giggle a few times. This is like, it's not, there's like something like, okay, I think if I was willing to put the absolute Herculean amount of effort in that would be required, I could get something out of this.
Really? Herculean?
I found it amusing in a lot of ways. But also like, I don't think that's why I listen to music in a weird way.
We were talking about Glenn Hansard earlier on. Yeah. Like, I'm at the point where I can't do Dour. Don't be coming at me with Dour. There has to be something else to it. And that's why the Eels have a new album coming out, which was another potential swap of a few spinning around in my head.
I like Eels.
Does the Eels have a new album coming out?
I believe you'll find their Eels, though.
Rather than the Eels. Yeah, but it seems weird to just say Eels. I don't like words to start with E.
But I do like pointing that out because it's a random musical fact that somewhere along the line I picked up. I can't 110% tell you
no,
where.
That's fair enough.
Although I kind of had a weird thing. I do like, there's quite a few Eels tunes that I quite like.
Yeah, I think
I love that one. What's the one with the carrot?
Last Stop This Town. Oh, it's one of my favourite albums.
I'm gonna go on down because the last stop is this town.
What?
I'm gonna go on down and fly away.
Well, all right.
That was a cool tune.
That's one of my favorite albums of all time. And honestly, one I would swap, but it's all about cancer. I don't want to do that again. There's other Eels albums I would swap.
Is that what that's about? That song?
Well, that's about his sister dying, that song.
What?
Yeah. You're dead, but the world keeps spinning. It's in the first fucking two words.
Fucking Jesus. I'm gonna have to re-listen to that. Do you know what I did during the week?
It's a beautiful album, though. What did you do during the week?
It's super good. Like, that's why I love the Eels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know anything else about them.
Well, we'll swap.
Oh, no. I know one other thing about them. I think you told me. He is the son of the man who first postulated the existence of alternate realities.
Sliding Doors, yeah.
Yeah.
I know that's not what it's called, but that's what the film's... Yeah,
with Gwyneth Paltrow. Do you know what I did during the week? Because I was kind of... under the weather. During the week, a friend of mine who had no band at her wedding... She's a very unconventional person. She's very wonderful, but she's... I really like
her. Out there.
She
marches to the beat of her own drum.
She had no band at her wedding, but she had several Spotify.
So she's marching alone.
Well, I'll tell you what she did in lieu of a drum. She had several playlists that she made up on Spotify that she gave over to the venue. She gave access to the venue. And there were playlists for certain moods. They were like upbeat, sort of romantic, sort of... dancey, and then upbeat but not dancey, and things like that. And I was listening to some of her wedding tunes.
What was good on it? I Often Dream of Trains was on there, wasn't it?
No. Funny enough, no.
Was Furry Green Adam Ball
on there? I want to root for the self in the shower. No. A lot of 80s stuff. But it kind of evoked a mood. I quite liked it, you know. A lot of sort of Belinda Carlisle, Tiffany kind of things.
Oh, wait, what Belinda Carlisle? It wasn't Heaven is a Place on Earth, is it?
Why? Because
fucking hate that song.
The rest of Belinda Carlisle's fucking catalogue is just such solid gold.
She's been knocking about for a while. She must have something else. We'll make heaven a place on earth. Stop writing lists down for our playlist. This is getting too long.
No, stick it on. That's a good one to stick on.
I hate that song.
You need to not stick on every song I suggest, because I suggest random shit.
No, but that's why it's good, because it gets fucking nuts.
Yeah. Well, look.
Gretchen Marx, Belinda Carlisle, fucking Rory Gallagher.
Fair play, but she had Tiffany. I like that Tiffany song.
Oh yeah, I think we're alone.
Not
her tune. That was a tune by another band. That's a cover.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Oh well, now I feel bad, because I felt that was one of my sort of cool kid credentials.
Yeah, I'll fucking deny this if you repeat it to me, but the Tiffany version's better.
Hey! I will repeat it to you many times. Be prepared to deny it.
I actually, we had a house guest during the week, which was my cousin's girlfriend. I live with my cousin, and his girlfriend had a friend of hers over from Canada. And they were playing music in the kitchen. And they were listening to I heard them listening to Dancing on the Ceiling. And from the other room, I kind of went, are you just listening to fucking Lionel Richie?
Kids love the 80s.
But this is the thing, but I didn't mean it as, I felt bad because immediately it got stopped and something else put on, but I didn't mean it as in, you losers, I didn't mean it like that, like, you know, I meant like, no, honestly, I didn't like
Richie. From you, from me, it wouldn't necessarily mean that, but
Lionel Richie was in the fucking Commodores, he's a dude. He is a dude, I am drunk.
Twice. But
that was my parents' wedding song.
Three times a day.
Oh, I know, that has to be in a lot of people's wedding.
Yeah,
song.
I'm sure it was a lot of people's. But
did you ever hear the Milton Jones one?
Sorry?
Did you ever hear the Milton Jones joke?
About Lionel Richie?
Yeah.
What is it?
I was talking to Lionel Richie the other day, yeah. He says hello.
I've said this before, but my favourite Milton Jones joke is like, my grandfather made file faxes for the mafia. He was involved in highly organized crime. But I was
going
to say,
favorite Milton
before
Jones
we forget... All right, go ahead.
Just one more, Milton Jones, before we go. You can then tell your story. My favorite Milton Jones joke is, the week before my dad died, we smeared lard all down his back. He went downhill pretty quickly after that.
But I do want to say that... there was an awkward edit. I got a phone call.
Okay,
let's go.
That's loud.
But... I didn't mean it as, like, I was saying from the other room, are you listening to fucking Lionel Richie? But it was more like surprise. I wasn't like going, you idiots, or whatever, like, you know, I was like going, are they really listening to Lionel Richie? Like, they're fucking considerably younger than you and I.
Kids love the 80s music, man.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like,
neither
do
I.
But then again, like, I loved the fucking 70s when I was a kid, so it makes sense, like, that... It doesn't.
They should love
the
90s if that were true.
Well, no. I mean, if you were born in 1990, then 20 years before that is 1970.
Okay, so...
Whereas 20 years before, when I was born, 1982, is 62.
Yeah, okay, I suppose, but it's...
Sorry, as a man Beatles head, it makes sense that people would be into Lionel Richie or... Aswad or whatever. Which one's Aswad?
Or Aha.
It's a great tune.
The video is in my head. Like, what's the one with the what's the one with the boat, the yacht?
You know, I don't know that song. I only know "Take on Me." I don't know any other Aha songs.
I don't think
it's
an Aha song. It's
no, they did a song. Are you thinking of Duran Duran? Her name.
That's the one. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, Rio. That's it. Yeah. Duran Duran, named for Milo O'Shea's character, wasn't it?
In Barbarella, yeah.
Who built the orgasm machine that Barbarella broke by having too much orgasm.
Two bands named after Barbarella.
What's the other one?
Do you want to guess?
Duran Duran and
Steely Dan.
Is that who was
Steely Dan? There's a vibrator in Barbarella called Steely Dan.
Good old Steely Dan, eh?
Fucking hate Steely Dan.
Jane Fonda was an interesting cat.
She was on, was cat, it Megyn Kelly?
In the 60s sense. No, yeah. In the, I don't
like hip swinging, yeah, variety.
Oh, she's a swinging cat, all yeah, right. Yeah.
She's swinging her tail on the way in to the room. She's not swinging. But the, wasn't she on Megyn Kelly recently and got in a big row with her about nothing, I'm sure.
Well, I would imagine Jane Fonda and Megyn Kelly are on opposite ends of the political spectrum.
Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't understand people who would fall out over politics. I really don't.
It's, yeah.
It's the new thing and all the kids are into it, falling out with people over politics, but I really just feel very strongly. Really?
I mean,
you bother?
You know, but it's this echo chamber business. Like, you know, why wouldn't you associate with people with different political beliefs than you? Why on earth would you just want to hang out with people who think exactly the same way you do? Like, you know, because it's easier.
Well, in a way it's easier, but in another way, I recall some fascinating conversations with David Quigley at this very table over fucking the Bible. David got into the Bible in a weird way. Not
do
in a
know
weird
this,
way.
David?
Yeah, David. He was here at the Cards, I think.
Oh, okay. Time.
David.
Where was he sitting?
David was the baldy chap. The, for all the world, he looks the skinhead.
Okay. I think I know who you're talking about.
Oh, he's sound as a pound. I'm such enormous
talent. Wait, hang on. David?
Yeah.
Do you mean Davey?
Davey, yeah.
Yeah, of course I know. Sorry, are you thinking, he's fucking David? But Davey, of course.
Davey discovered the Bible.
I'm just trying to place this David. I don't know a David. I know a Davey.
And he'd tell you with such fucking intensity all these Bible stories. And you'd be like, and there was this fella, and he had three wives, and he was riding them, and then there was one of them that was, and I was like, I accept that. That probably is in the Bible. But also, at the same time, was it a recommendation or a warning? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, it was fun listening to Davey when he was going through his Bible phase.
He's a fucking interesting dude, is Davey.
He's one of my very favourite people.
Yeah, he's a laugh.
He's a good crack. He's a good crack, yeah.
Can I, for context sake, play another Robin Hitchcock tune? Because I do want people, if they haven't listened to Robin Hitchcock, I'd like them to check him out. Because I really love this album.
I would say check him out.
What do I want to hear?
What's the one about personality traits?
Uncorrected personality traits. Yeah. That's exactly what this is. So here we go. This is uncorrected personality traits.
Uncorrected personality traits that seem whimsical in a child may prove to be ugly in a fully grown adult. Lack of involvement with the father or over-involvement with the mother can result in lack of ability to relate to sexual beasts. And in homosexual leanings, narcissism, transsexuality, girls from the waist up, men from the waist down, attempts to be your own love object. Reconcile your parents to you by becoming both at once. Even Marilyn Monroe was a man, but this tends to get overlooked by our mother-fixated, overweight, sexist media.
Do you know what kind of put this in my head this week? Have you heard of Ian Sinclair?
Oh, the name is familiar.
He's an author. Do you remember I was telling you I was watching Stuart Lee interview Your Man from the Fall last week?
Yeah.
this playlist just kind of seems to keep growing, and he interviewed this guy Ian Sinclair, and there was a video of, and then the next video was Ian Sinclair and Alan Moore talking.
It's good when you find a vein like that, isn't it?
Oh yeah, like, it's, keep it, I'd never,
for a couple of weeks,
like, I didn't know who this guy was, like, you know, but he writes a lot about London. Okay. Apparently he writes like novels about London, and it just kind of made me think of Robin Hitchcock and Trams of Old London.
Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London.
It should have made me think about Ralph McTell and all of his wonderful songs. Although he did the theme tune for The Wind in the Willows, didn't he?
Oh my god, was that the same guy?
I think that's Ralph McTell.
The Wind in the Willows,
that's a beautiful softly song.
To me, that one.
I think, well, whatever the tune at the start of The Wind in the Willows TV show was, with David Jason. I've been listening to a lot of that weird English folk music from the 60s. A lot of it's quite trippy. Like, I was listening to... Nick Jones, I think is his name. Nick, N-I-C.
Piper at the Gates of Dawn is a Wind in the Willows reference, isn't
it? Yeah, that's it's the name of one of the chapters from Wind in the Willows.
That's weird.
Wind in the Willows.
Yeah. Do you remember the Monty Python one? Or, well, it wasn't really a Monty Python one.
With John Cleese and Terry Jones.
And Michael Palin was in there.
Michael Palin was... But they were fucking well suited for those parts. Wasn't Terry Jones Moley and Michael Palin was Ratty?
No, Terry Jones was...
Toad.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a badger in there somewhere.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was actually quite good. Yeah, I remember seeing it by accident. It was on the Den.
Yeah, it was a weird one. Yeah,
yeah, it is actually. It is pretty good. It's pretty faithful, like, isn't it?
And yet, would you have thought? You know, you wouldn't have thought watching Wind in the Willows as a kid. You wouldn't have thought this would be great if they just handed it over to the Pythons.
But that's like. But to me, that kind of. Ties into Robin Hitchcock.
Absolutely,
like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just
Danny,
like,
can I pour a wee bit more of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Pour me some too.
Surely.
And I just fucking love this album. Like, you know, I like the fact that it's fucking funny. Like, he's singing about sad things, but he's also funny. Like.
Yeah.
And. Well, funny in the way that Bowie can be funny and Dylan can be funny. Like, you know. And,
well, you said when that was playing, you were saying this was very like Dylan, or like Dylan, like Bowie.
It might be the fact that it's the same influences. Like, Bowie was a fucking Syd Barrett head. Like, particularly a lot of the early Bowie stuff, you can hear Barrett influence. Yeah. Like, and you get, like, literally, like, the first time I ever heard Robin Hitchcock was on a documentary about Syd Barrett where he played... He knows the chords to fucking songs off Syd Barrett's solo albums, which nobody does, like, you know. And that was the first time I ever heard him. He was playing...
That's a labour of love, if ever I heard it.
You and Me and Domino. He was playing that off Syd Barrett's second solo album.
Right, I have no idea what
that is. It's just a tune on his second solo
album. I know You and Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard. Is it anything like that?
Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard.
That's an awesome tune.
That's
he's retiring. Did
Ryman
you hear that?
Simon, yeah, he is retiring.
Why Ryman Simon is retiring?
That's the name of his first solo album, Ryman Simon. But now Ryman Simon is retiring.
I feel bad about that. If he has a big blowout, I will definitely try and see him. If he has a final tour, like,
I'm sure he'll fucking make even if he said, stop.
Oh, here, listen. He could be doing it for the next 10 years, like, quite comfortably, and live out. Yeah, that's his retirement
like
plan.
Keen scene.
Yeah, but it's. I would go see him just to say I've seen him. I really like Paul Simon.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like him as much as the next guy, I suppose. You know,
he has some awesome tunes. I love. Yeah. I love 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
It's great. I love.
Just hop on the bus. Give Gus. You
false hope. What's that song?
I don't know.
Mother and Child Reunion. I like that one.
He's had an awful lot of stuff. He's done an awful lot of good stuff.
He's married to Carrie Fisher.
Was he?
Yeah, for about an hour, apparently.
It's the kind of lifestyle she led, wasn't it?
We've been watching Catastrophe during the week as well. We've been mad on this All 4 app, because I got it to watch Derry Girls, and then I've watched the thing we were talking about earlier, the Mitchell and Webb, and then we watched Cat had never seen Catastrophe.
There's a lot of good stuff on there.
So we stuck on Catastrophe. Do you know what? Fucking Cat loves it, like, you know.
I made a mistake. Well, I love her. I love Sharon Horgan. Like,
she's brilliant. Yeah, she's phenomenal. The show she had before that was very funny as well. Pulling. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
She's just super brilliant. I remember her hosting Have I Got News For You.
She was on The Best Show with Tom Sharp.
Was she?
She is golden.
She is just...
She writes a show for HBO, like, with Sarah Jessica Parker in it, and Tom Sharpling was on the writing staff for a season. And she went on the fucking Best Show.
She is just one of those people who I think is a naturally witty person.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, listen, anyway, yeah, go watch Sharon Horgan in anything. She's brilliant. She's married, or she's not married, she's a sister of some kind, like an Ireland rugby international.
So I don't know enough about rugby to fill in the blanks on that, Niall, to be honest, but she is related
neither
to
do I.
Rugby.
We won against
fucking
Wales there.
Sorry,
yeah,
I'm
go on the lads.
Talking, like completely interjecting here, but is your man Shane from Boyzone super religious now? I was flicking around after Interspace was over last night. fucking Shane.
You know that whole Joe Dante, Shane from Boyzone connection?
But he was on the Ray Darcy show and all he was talking about was religion. Has Shane from Boyzone found God?
Probably.
Probably been looking for years.
Looking for something like that. Or he just tripped over him. Like,
I'm sure he's a lovely lad.
Oh, I'd say there's very little harm in him. Isn't he the fella that went on Celebrity Big Brother? And
I don't know.
One of the Boyzone lads, because briefly...
They were famous.
Well, briefly they were famous. Well, actually, no, they were fairly famous.
Stephen Gately is on it plays a part in a big finished Doctor Who audio drama.
He became a hero.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like.
He's great on the audio Doctor Who with Paul McGann.
There you go. But he, because your one Moyer, John Moyer, attacked him outright. It was nasty, you know, what she did to him, like, when he died. But no, I think it was Shane from Boyzone, one of the two lads that was really just filling up the numbers. What were the Shane and
Mikey?
Yeah. No, Mikey. Mikey, God love him. Mikey had pretensions, I believe.
What's the film? What's it called?
Oh, yeah!
What the fuck is it called?
Fatal Deviation.
You have Fatal Deviation. You, Mikey from Boyzone, can do Kung Fu.
No, but one of the lads from Boyzone was on Celebrity Big Brother. It was kind of after it had passed its prime, Big Brother. But apparently halfway through, I wasn't watching it at this stage, but I heard about it after the fact. One of the lads, John Hines, actually, I remember telling me about it. He thought for a while, I think it was Shane from Boyzone was the coolest guy on the planet, because halfway through Celebrity Big Brother, he was just like, oh, I'm fucking sick of this shit. And he climbed up on the roof and tried to run out of the
thing.
Was that
him?
I think that was one of the guys
from Big
Brother.
I was only thinking about this the other day. Remember the one who was in there when... Remember there was the whole racist scandal?
Mm-hmm.
And remember, some reason this came into my head the other day. Remember she walked out of the Big Brother house and there was...
Oh, Shoppa Papa Dong.
And remember she walked out of the Big Brother house and there was nobody there.
Oh, they had to not have anybody there. She would have got...
I'm like, you could tell she was like expecting the thing, and she walked out and there's fucking nobody and she's looking around. And Davina McCall had to tell her, since you've been in the house, you've said a lot of racist shit. And
that was all put on. She had been told.
Had she been told?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, that's how fucking dopey I am.
No. I would say it took her by surprise that there was nobody there. But before they let her out, apparently her agent had kicked up a stink and said, I need to explain to her that she has to be fucking careful now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she was obnoxiously racist.
But also thought she was going to walk out, up until her agent spoke to her apparently, thought she was going to walk out to fucking fanfare.
Yeah. There would have been fanfare, but there also would have been absolutely... I would hope... My faith in the human race makes me hope that it wouldn't have been 50-50. But there would have been a contingent of people there who thought she was deadly.
Yeah, yeah.
But she just took against your one who was Indian. Took against...
I don't... Shepard. Look, you know what? The only reason it even popped into my head is because I was listening to a Stuart Lee special that was done around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going on about...
made Mr. Winky go all soft, it did.
The values of the Carphone warehouse.
Yeah.
Who were sponsoring him. Do you follow the values of Jesus or Buddha? No. I follow the values of the Carphone warehouse. I'm going to play another blast of Robin Hitchcock here, man, because I get it. There's 5 minutes left.
Did it sicken your hole? We have slightly longer because we had a break.
Oh,
but
did
it sicken your hole how people got so caught up when she died? I realise it was tragic and she was a young mother and she died very young. She was probably, I'm probably older than her now than when she died.
I don't think I paid super, I know, like, I know she passed away. I don't think I paid super attention to it.
People were in absolute tears. And the only thing I could think was, she is a human being who extolled the virtues of willful ignorance, racism, and attacking anybody who came within an inch of exceptionality.
Do you not think she probably learned her lesson, though?
No.
Okay.
I don't think... I think that woman died having learned nothing her entire life. She learned to speak, because I heard her do that. And she could walk, because I saw her do that.
She could do both at the same time.
I'm not even sure I've seen her do both at the same time.
Listen, I'm not a fan of that woman's, and the fact that she died young does not make me a fan. There's the truth of it. I didn't like her.
This is a track called Sounds Great When You're Dead.
Go for it.
Your mother is a journalist. Your father is a creep. They make it in your bedroom when they think you're fast asleep. The scenes that they're enacting now beside your little bed are never in your consciousness, but always in your head. Baby, it might sound dodgy now, but it sounds great when you're dead. When you're... Your sister is a butterfly, your brother is a drunk.
I can't begin to tell you how much I like this album, Niall. I know it didn't strike the same chord with you, but I fucking love it. Like, I like the fact he's dealing with dark subject matter, but he's also got a bit of a... This is why the Glenn Hansards of this world, I can't be getting on with them these days, because there needs to be... Because it's human nature. If you, no matter what that. Shit state of affairs you're in, you're gonna make a joke.
Yeah, that is true. That is absolutely true. Gallows humor, they call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, no matter what, I would wager, no matter what the situation is, you'll make some sort of quip.
Yeah, you're absolutely 100% right.
And I accept also. I think maybe what makes Glenn Hansard and The Frames a good live act rather than a good sort of recorded act is that in the live stuff, that humor is kind of baked in the interaction. Whereas Hitchcock, Robin Hitchcock, will bake it into the actual product. It's there in the songs. That
yeah, I thought you were going to say the sauce.
I know. I didn't dislike this.
Well, I'm good.
Hand on heart, I didn't dislike.
I knew that was the most I was going to get.
I didn't think
you were going to all of a sudden, like, oh my God, I have to fucking buy all this shit. I didn't think you were going to do that. Like,
what is post-punk?
It is. Punk is... What way did fucking Tony... What's his face? Tony Wilson from Factory Records describe it?
Did he say it happened after punk?
Tony Wilson said punk... The main statement to be taken from punk is this is fucked, and post-punk is I'm fucked. That's the way he put it. Like, if you listen to fucking God Save the Queen, all this stuff, it's all about the establishment, this and that, things that, like, greater things that are keeping me down. Post-punk is love will tear us apart again. The Sex Pistols would not have sang that, you know?
No, they definitely wouldn't. I don't like the Sex Pistols.
I mean, only one album, and I like a lot of it, like, you know. But then there's The Clash. The Clash was all, like, Clash, I'm so bored of the USA. Like, in their early days, it was all...
Judy McGuire, for the Drunk Squad!
That's a great song.
It's a good song, yeah.
There's,
Police and Thieves.
Okay. Well, that's, that's Junior Mervin. That's a cover. That's
Is a that reggae a cover?
Cover, yeah.
That's amazing.
Police
that sounds
and
reggae.
Thieves! Have you, the original version
Did
of
I say
that
it sounds reggae?
It's half the speed, and it's the guy singing... Police and thieves in the street.
Street.
It's fucking... The Junior Mervin version of that is fucking brilliant. It's really fucking great stuff.
Okay.
There's a lot of that dub reggae that I'm only getting into now, and I get it that most people need weed that to get into it. Oh, I have to look forward to me doing it now, do I? But I get it that most people did it with the aid of weed, but for me, that music is weed. I don't need the weed, like, you know.
Couldn't
it could
hurt.
Be a poster.
Couldn't hurt, though.
No, I get it. Like, I get it. Like, I'm a square, whatever. But, like, you know.
No, you don't. You're not necessarily a square, Dan. I like weed. Do you know what?
I do, when it works right.
I'm too fucking far removed from it. I gave all that up, and I haven't been able to get back to Weed Island, I'm afraid. It's a pity.
It's leafy.
not for want of trying, Dan, but I haven't been able to get back there. But, what am I thinking? What was I going to say? Yeah. But yeah, post-punk is weird because I feel like there were kind of two ways to go after punk, and it was one was to get a bit more earnest and one was to get a bit more showy, and I went with the kind of earnest crowd, and I like U2 and I like Bruce Springsteen, and I kind of don't so much like Brian Eno. It's not my thing.
Well, that's pre-punk.
Brian Eno?
Yeah, Roxy Music is like 75. Punk is 77.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It would have been pretty
Roxy much, Music is 75.
It would be fairly parallel with Bowie, yeah. Depends on what era you're talking about. The first Roxy Music album, I'm pretty sure, came out in 75. It's a new sensation.
You're fucking blowing my mind here.
No, they would have been running pretty concurrently, because if you think about it, Brian Eno and Bowie are big collaborators 5 years later, like, you know,
that is,
and Brian Eno has Roxy Music behind him at that point.
Oh my,
like, you know,
god, I think that's what I thought of as Brian Eno then.
Yeah, no, there's a whole era of Roxy Music that has nothing to do with Brian Eno.
If you had told me,
like, Brian Eno isn't on Dance Away the Heartache, Dance Away like Roxy Music kept going, like, you know, but
the song that sold 1,000 headache tablets.
I fucking love that song.
It's alright, like.
Yesterday. When
you blown my mind now. If you had asked me to fucking locate Roxy Music, I would have said 81,
you can tell
79.
Do you know how you know
earliest?
It's pre-punk?
How?
Saxophone. Punks are like, fuck the saxophone. Man. There's no saxophone on any of the Sex Pistols albums.
Do you remember 30
Rock? Or the one Sex Pistols album.
Do you remember 30 Rock? Do you remember when
I remember the
episode with Carrie Fisher on it.
Save me, Liz Lemon, you're my only hope.
Yeah, but the one where Liz Lemon meets
all they're gonna write MILF. What was the show they were gonna
MILF
write?
Island?
No, they were gonna write a movie about, was it Bitch something, I forget.
Anyway, I just remember the bit where Liz gets in this fever dream and meets all the people whose jobs are obsolete now in the modern world. And it's like, I used to be a travel agent. I used to work in a bookstore, and I used to play dynamite saxophone solos and rock and roll songs.
If it wasn't for Springsteen, there'd be none. When you think about it, like, and Eddie and the Cruisers.
I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me. I don't think it's something wrong with me. I think it's just the background I came from. That kind of earnest music was more.
Why, though?
I don't.
The Dubliners were a bit of crack. Christy Moore's a bit of crack.
Yeah, but they could dissolve into non-crack very quickly. The Dubliners, for every Dicey Riley, there was a Scorn, Not a Simplicity.
I suppose. Yeah, only when Phil Coulter fucking got involved, though. They should have fucking locked him out, like, you know.
Oh, it's a beautiful song, though.
That's alright.
I like that song.
I mean, no, I do.
I think it's a really beautiful song. But yes. But also, like, look here, come here. Bruce Springsteen was funny. He had a lot of fun songs.
He's not funny.
No, he's not funny.
But he did have good time rock and roll. I heard a buddy who was a big baseball player. It's a lot of that, you know.
I'm back in high school.
Fucking Steve Van Zandt with his mandolin.
Look, I just feel like post-punk. If you call yourself post-anything,
or anti anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like I don't.
Post punk just means we're still noisy, but we're not necessarily fucking wearing safety pins or screaming about the Queen.
Yeah, it's a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Billy Bragg did it. My favorite. Well, yeah, but Billy Bragg is very much his own thing.
Yeah,
is he post-punk?
True. Yeah, he would be. Yeah,
he would be, wouldn't he? Yeah, I like Billy Bragg.
Yeah, everybody likes Billy Bragg. It's very hard to dislike him.
Milkman of Human Kindness.
I love that song.
That's a brilliant song.
I love you. I'm the milkman of human kindness. I will leave an extra pint.
Look, I have a lot of time for Billy Bragg. Crazy commie that he is. You see? Because I don't judge people by their politics. He would probably judge me by my politics. But good fucking luck to him if he can find my politics. I like to think I'm eclectic in that respect, don't you?
We need to think of something for next week. We're done.
So we are.
So what are you... You had something in your head for next week. And it was 56 minutes long and you can't take that back. What was it?
Oh, yeah. You're not going to thank me for saying this.
It's less than an hour.
I had not remembered that until you said 56 minutes long. And
56 Shades of Grey.
You're not going to thank me for this. You really aren't. What is it? I want you to watch... During the week when I was in my suds with my flu...
Well, it might snow. I'm out of the time. What is it?
Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, February's such a fucker of a month, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's fucking practically March now.
It's deceptive, though. February is a winter month. We're going by fucking... Climate change has changed all those old fucking...
Yeah, no, no, it absolutely has.
February is now...
But also October, fucking October is summer.
Yeah, October can be an absolutely beautiful month, so forget about autumn being in October. Autumn doesn't start till November, winter doesn't end until February is fucking gone, baby. February is an awful
fucking
month.
Fucking mid-March.
Yeah. Do you know how I know that? I missed two of our four rag weeks at college because I was snowed in February.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that has left an imprint in me. I know. Yeah, was February is like my least favourite month.
It's always been my least favourite month. I fucking hate February.
Yeah, try fucking hearing from you cunts that there's all fucking strippers in the college and shit.
Just fucking strippers. I know it was in the newspaper. I wasn't fucking there.
Vice President Ratty. Do you remember that? That's a very inside joke to shout at the fucking podcast. But anyway, listen. I want you to...
It's Wind in the Willows. Vice President Ratty.
And President Badger. Listen.
I want you to watch...
They're all weasels.
I want you to watch the Joe Rogan Netflix comedy special.
Oh, fuck you. Triggered. Okay.
I told you not to wish on it.
Is there an audio version of it so I don't have to look at his stupid shiny head?
Just download the app and you don't need to watch it. Actually, you know what? It's worth watching the last 5 minutes of it because a lot of that is physicality, but
look,
only the last five minutes.
I watched the Chris Rock special and it wasn't that good. And Joe Rogan is not fit to shine Chris Rock's shoes. How bad is this?
I have yet to watch the Chris Rock special. However, I think I might do that
tonight. The divorce
tonight.
Stuff is good, but the first half of it is just alright.
Is he too famous to be funny now?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, he's given too much leeway up top. He's going to small... The thing I respect about Chris Rock is he still goes to little shitholes to work out his stuff, but he's still Chris Rock.
So the really the size...
If fucking Glenn Hansard turns up downstairs in the bar at the Spirit Store and plays a shitty song, he's going to get a huge round of applause.
Mm.
Same thing.
I was over-enthusiastic the last time I went to see Glenn Hansard at the Spirit Store. But...
He's wearing a stupid cap on the cover of his new album. Listen, like he's been digging holes.
He was wonderful. But the night that I went to see him, the last night I went to see him, literally before I walked into the Spirit Store, I was having a fag before I walked in, somebody came to me and said, "You know your ex? She's engaged now." So I was over-enthusiastic that night. I was like, well, I guess I have to make this the greatest night of my life then. So,
oh my God.
There's a little insight.
That's not a good thing to hear.
See Glenn Hansard. Like,
you can't put a spin on that.
You know what? I'm very happy for her. But that night I wasn't necessarily.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's rough, man. That's a rough thing to hear at the fucking crest of a night out. Like, you know.
Oh, I was loud that night, man. No, that's... I was like, Whoa, Glenn, you're fucking amazing!
Like you're at a Guns N' Roses gig or something.
Oh, I was way over the energy of the room.
Welcome to the jungle! And he's like, I was thinking about your face.
Oh, it's only funny because that's what it was like.
Do you want for this week to listen to an album or watch a film?
Danny, you listen to your heart, sir.
Watch the jerk.
Oh, like the fucking jerk. Baby. Right,
this is a spoiler.
This is shit.
The first ever spoiler for an upcoming podcast.
And this is shit. No, no.
So,
I haven't watched it in a long time.
Joe Rogan and the Jerk.
Is that apt or is
connected?
Listen, I like Joe Rogan. I'm not going to say.
So maybe I will too. I don't like. No,
you know what?
What's the special called?
Triggered.
Triggered.
I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I liked
it's
it.
Audio, like.
It's a different vibe to his podcast.
Will you be annoyed if I just listen to it rather than watch it?
Yeah. Don't have fastness.
How many times are you going to punch me?
Not very, really. Actually, you might almost say, I won't give a fuck.
This has been a lot of fun, actually.
Danny, I had a good time.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know if it's garbled gibberish. No.
Do you feel like if we actually took the time to edit these new episodes down to an hour, they'd be absolute gold?
Oh, fucking killer. But, you know, who was that? It would take another 2 hours to do that.
That's true.
Because you have to listen to it and then figure out what you can cut out and what you can't.
And we're working men now.
I don't have
that time either. No.
We so work down digital mines.
Mine in the digital salt.
But listen, guys, thanks very much for listening. Robin Hitchcock, apologies.
You're the real heroes here. Robin, you're the real hero.
I love Robin Hitchcock.
Robin, I didn't dislike you as much as I thought the first time I listened to the album. By the last time I listened to the album, I was actually kind of like, I can see where this guy's coming from. I like him.
Fur green eyes, fur green hole. It's fur green Adam Bowl.
Look, I can see how people could get into him.
You could get into him as a fucking full-time job. There's a lot to be getting on with. He did 20-odd albums, like, you know.
I would recommend anybody check out. What was the name of the album? Something about trains?
I Often Dream of Trains.
I Often Dream of Trains.
Basingstoke or Reading.
Kind of reminded me. Do you know what was weird about that? It sort of put me in mind of Josh Ritter, who seems to hate trains. But Robin Hitchcock doesn't.
Forgets all his songs about trains.
Yeah, Robin Hitchcock seems to actually quite like trains in a weird
Robin
way.
Robin Hitchcock's adding to the canon, if anything.
Well, yeah, so it's like weird. So I was like...
Do you still listen to Josh? Have you listened to a new Josh Ritter album since The Animal Years? Or The Animal fucking... Wolves Underneath the Stairs, So Long. Whatever that album was.
No. However... I do still occasionally listen to the Josh Ritter albums that I listened to before. So he's getting money for it.
I saw him in Galway. I bought that album and fucking, it's never been played.
What, The Animal Years?
Yeah, The Animal Years.
I mean, that's not a bad album.
I got a girl in the war.
And the only thing I know to do.
There's good stuff on it. But I enjoyed it the night I saw him.
I became a thin blue flame.
Again, not a bit of crack.
Yeah, but that's the weird thing about that is Josh Ritter was crack in the beginning.
Yeah, no, he's not.
He's got an
album out now, like a current...
Funny enough, the girl that got engaged the night I went to see Glenn Hansard, when we broke up, as a parting gift, I bought her his novel, because she really loved him.
God, what's that like?
I don't know. I've often meant to go back and get it for myself.
Mark Twain head. Maybe it's brilliant.
Yeah. He's got a steamboat on the front of So Runs the World with...
Steamboat, it's his fucking combine harvester in the front of it. Like,
now you got a brand new combine harvester. Now you give you the key.
Alright, listen, we're just like, I'm gonna press stop and we're gonna, I think, continue enjoying ourselves.
Will you play us out this episode with I Got a Brand New Combine Harvester?
I couldn't possibly. How does it go?
The Wurzels.
I don't know how it goes. I could certainly play us out with something.
Fine, no, I'm not asking you to pick up the guitar.
I thought that's what you're asking. Go and get the guitar and play.
Splice in the Wurzels, I've Got a Brand New Combine Harvester.
With I Often Dream of Trains.
Oh yeah, no, that Robin.
No.
We've shortchanged Robin Hitchcock in a way I didn't intend to, because I didn't dislike Robin Hitchcock at all. I actually, by the end of it, I was like, I'm not going to, but I could if I had to get into this. But... Play us out with some Robin Hitchcock.
No, we could do...
No.
Okay.
We'll come back.
Aunt Sally.
We'll come back. Do you remember Aunt Sally?
Yeah.
She was a bitch. Wurzel should have dropped her the first sign of Babs Windsor coming in as...
Was she in Wurzel Cummins?
She was... Do you not remember her?
No.
She was the figurehead of a ship who
this
used to come to
this is the DVD extras now. Who the fuck was she in Wurzel Cummins?
She was... She wasn't Aunt Sally. Aunt Sally was a bitch who toyed with Wurzel's affections. Babs Windsor played like the figurehead of a ship who clearly deeply loved Wurzel. But Wurzel only had eyes for Aunt Sally. And even as a fucking 8 or 10 year old child, I was like, Wurzel, just please go with Babs Windsor.
So fucking John Pertwee had fucking chasing his affections. Fucking Babs Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
Joe from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably something else.
Uh-huh.
He was a fucking... Like, actually, that was... He was a pretty cool dude, John Pertwee.
Do you know how you do that? Do you know how you accomplish that?
Money. You get paid...
No.
Women to pretend they're interested
in you. It's so much simpler than that.
As actresses.
You just put a WR after W, a WR after O, a WR after R, and then... Away we go. Put a WR after Z and put a WR after E. A WR after... No, I fucked that up somewhere, did I?
That was like...
A WR after her. And a laughter her and then you left with me.
This is like a joke I tried to write one time on Facebook where it was like... It was something to do with Miley Cyrus. And I think I put it on Facebook. Someone should tell Billy Ray Cyrus about how Miley's behaving, but he's notoriously difficult to communicate with. As far as I'm... to the best of my knowledge, what you have to do is you have to tell his lips to tell his fingertips. By the time you get to his heart, it might not even understand. Anyway, listen. Thanks very much for listening to all of this. I've been Daniel Hanlon. Niall's coughing. I'm sorry. I'll give you a chance. Do you want to cough? All right. Thanks very much for listening. Talk to you next week. What did I give you to listen to? The Jerk. He's going to watch The Jerk. I'm going to watch fucking shiny head Joe Rogan. And we'll talk to you next week. Okay, cheerio.
1, 2, 3, 4. I have seen the sleeping nights of Jesus. Gazing out across the open sea, I have seen the sleeping nights of Jesus, and they look extremely tired to me, dying of starvation in the gutter. Future holds for me. Or alcoholic poisoning in the toilet of my choice. That's all there is as far as I can see. Fried to death in sex.